Good morning. Today is January 22nd, 2020, and the time is 9:13, and I now call this meeting of the Dallas City Council to order. We'll begin with an invocation followed by the Pledge of Allegiance. I'm going to recognize Chairman Kleiman to introduce our guest who is here to give the invocation, and Chairman Atkins, you will lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance and Pledge of the Texas Flag.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to introduce Rabbi Andrew Mark Paley, who is the senior rabbi and spiritual leader of Temple Shalom, a Reformed congregation in Dallas, Texas, and in my District 11. Ordained in 1995, Rabbi Paley holds a master's degree in Hebrew letters from Hebrew Union College, Jewish Institute of Religion, and a bachelor's degree in industrial and organizational psychology from Ohio State University, and is a certified marital and premarital counselor. Rabbi Paley is a member of the Central Conference of American Rabbis, the Southwest Association of Reform Rabbis, a member and past president of the Rabbinical Association of Greater Dallas, and is the honorary director of the Dallas Hebrew Free Loan Association. In the city of Dallas, Rabbi Paley is a Dallas police chaplain, was a member of the Mayor's Task Force on Poverty, a member of the Dallas Morning News Faith Advisory Committee, and a regular opinion contributor. A founding member and chair-elect of Faith Forward Dallas at Thanksgiving Square, where faith leaders unite for peace and justice. A board member of the Senior Source and chair of its Interfaith Advisory Committee, and a member of the Muslim-Jewish Advisory Council of the Dallas Chapter of the American Jewish Committee. Rabbi Paley currently serves as the National Secretary of Sigma Alpha Mu Fraternity and has served as a mentor for rabbinic colleagues in congregations around the country, as well as to rabbinical students at the seminary. Rabbi Paley has edited two prayer books, one for the Sabbath and one for families for the high holidays. Rabbi Paley is married to Deborah Niederman, the past president of the Association of Reformed Jewish Educators, and is the father of Molly and Samuel. Thank you, Rabbi, for being here today, and we look forward to your words.
Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen of the City Council, dear friends of our city, thank you for this honor of being able to bring words of greeting to you today and to this auspicious body. I'm always grateful to be with you. And so in this spirit, we invoke your name, Holy One of Blessing, Spirit of Love, of Life, of Community, and of Justice. We ask your blessings on these brave souls who have been called to lead our city in which we live, in which we work, and we play. Help them as leaders today not to ask first, how do we fix this problem, but rather, what do we need to learn? How might we need to change? And to whom do we need to listen? Remind them that they are not only leaders, but they are also servants, and that it is their responsibility, as it is ours, to serve the common good of all. Remind them that no matter where we live, everyone is our neighbor, our sibling, and that throughout the ages, prophets have called the leaders of the people to respect and protect the least of those among us, our children, the elderly, the poor, those who are hungry, those who have no homes, those who are ill in body, in spirit, or in mind, the strangers and immigrants in our midst, those who live on the margins, those who are alone, those who are forgotten. Holy One of Blessing, grant these wise leaders the wisdom and courage to know and do what is right and good and true. May they speak out when it is time to speak out, and listen patiently, respectfully, and receptively when it is time to listen. May they always be guided by the spirit of community, the spirit of justice, and by the spirit of love. This we pray in the name of all that we hold sacred and holy, all that we hold good and right and true. May it be so. Amen.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Honored with the Texas flag, I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one faith, one and indivisible.
Okay, we're going to hear from our open microphone speakers. Madam Secretary.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Your first five registered speakers will be Sammy Kahn, Eli Desopoulos, Alexandria King, William Hopkins, and Linda Bates. I'll recite the speaker guidelines. Speakers must observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any speaker making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the City Council shall be removed from the room. Individuals are given 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the time at the podium. When your time is up, please stop. Address your comments to Mayor Medrano only. Also, if you have any handouts, go ahead and hand it to the officer to my left and your right, as it will affect your speaking time. Your first speaker is Sammy Kahn.
Hello, council members. My name is Sammy Kahn, and I live at 6714 Spring Valley Road, Dallas, Texas, 75254. I'm 16 years old and in the 11th grade at Greenhill School. I'm here with my human rights class to talk about just one of the instances of when a human rights of a Dallas citizen was violated. This act was committed over a century ago by a large group of people, and none were held accountable. The victim's name was Alan Brooks. He was between the ages 38 to 65, with no official birth documentation, as he was likely born into slavery. The year was 1910. Alan Brooks was an African-American man living in Dallas who was accused of raping a 3-year-old girl. The day of his trial was March 3rd. He was supposed to be fairly tried, but a mob of estimated 3,000 people took matters into their own hands. Around a dozen of them charged into the Old Red Courthouse, tied a rope around Brooks' neck, and threw him out of the second-story window. He was then dragged through the streets for about 8 blocks before being lynched on a telephone pole next to the Elks Arch. Not one person was convicted of this horrific murder, and his story went completely unheard of until recently. My group and I have worked on this case study and are here to make this story known. Since the end of the Civil War, racism has been institutionalized in our country's government. The trial was skewed against Alan Brooks. His jury was to be selected from among 150 white males and a judge who said he deserved to die anyways. The Dallas Morning News, on the day after this terrible crime, said that the mob was angered by the horror of one of the most heinous crimes since the days of Reconstruction. Even the Dallas City Council itself was biased. If you look at the City Council minutes of March 4th, 1910, there's no mention of a mob whatsoever, despite thousands of people publicly lynching a man and then using the event as entertainment on postcards. Discriminatory laws may not exist anymore, but we still see their effects in society today. The presence of institutionalized racism is what allows innocent African-American kids to be shot by police officers. It allows innocent families to be detained at the border. It allows legal immigrants with proper documentation to be barred from exiting DFW Airport due to our president's executive order against Muslim-majority countries. That is why we are here today. First, Alan Brooks is misidentified on a Dallas plaque in the National Memorial for Justice and Peace in Montgomery, Alabama, which was created by the Equal Justice Initiative. We believe that should be affixed immediately. Also, we think the City of Dallas should place a memorial plaque either by the Old Red Courthouse or on the corner of Akron and Main Street where the lynching was committed. Putting it next to the Confederate War Memorial is not sufficient and extremely distasteful in our opinion. In light of a holiday just passed, I would like to end on a quote from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. "The ultimate measure of a man or a city is not where he stands in moments of comfort and convenience, but where he stands at times of challenge and controversy." Thank you.
Thank you. Ellie Desopoulos.
Hello, my name is Ellie Desopoulos, and I live at 6919 Lloyd Valley Lane in Dallas, Texas. I'm a senior at Greenhill School, and I'll be speaking today on behalf of my classmates on our city's accountability regarding LGBT history and education. About 2 miles from this city hall, around 30 years ago, a vibrant gay community flourished in historically conservative Dallas. Oaklawn bars and restaurants bustled with patrons, and people young and old learned from each other. Activists spread the word of justice beyond the boundaries of their communities and into a city that was burgeoning with promises of progress as we approached the new millennium. Yet, at the same time, the AIDS disease rattled the community to its core, and Dallas was one of the worst cities to be in if one was afflicted by the disease. In 1988, the city spent only $55,000 on funding treatment. In comparison, that same year, Dallas spent 10 times that on filling an empty hole to turn it into a lot in the city. Thus, our citizens' hope was stolen from them, and they were forced to surrender to a life's end of pain marked by the scars of boils that the epidemic had thrown upon their bodies. Also in 1988, two gay men, John Lloyd Griffin and Tommy Lee Trimble, were brutally killed in that very neighborhood that they called home. During the prosecution of their murder, the state district court judge, Jack Hampton, said that they wouldn't have been killed if they hadn't been cruising the streets picking up teenage boys. They weren't. They were just two men living in a time when their very existence was put up for debate and blamed for causing one of the world's worst health crises. The judge put prostitutes and gays at the same level and thus said he would have a difficult time giving the murderer of two gay men a longer sentence just because their lives weren't worth it. Since those days, Dallas has made incredible efforts not only to changing our city's reputation among LGBT people, but making a real difference in the conditions they endure in our city. Now, after all the progress we've made, it's necessary for Dallas to look back on her past to understand how we can move forward. Despite the continued endurance of the gay community to survive all that's been inflicted upon it, our state leads the nation in murder of transgender individuals, and the numbers are only going up. No matter what acts or ordinances are put into place, if the social attitudes of our citizens, divorced from our politics, don't change, my generation won't live to see a day in which LGBT people can truly live without fear. For this reason, we ask that the Dallas City Council consider sponsoring educational initiatives that reach beyond gay communities themselves and into our city as a whole. Primarily, we request stronger curriculum on LGBT health and history in the Dallas public school system and for public awareness efforts through a museum exhibition at the Dallas Holocaust and Human Rights Museum. We ask that the people of this city be taught not to turn towards the regressive and reactionary attitudes reemerging in this country and instead learn to accept themselves and their peers for who they are. Thank you.
Alexandria King.
Alexandria King, 3900 Tribune Way, Apartment 228, Addison, Texas, 75001. Good morning. Thank you so much for your time and consideration. On behalf of my classmates and I at Greenhill School, I come before this body to present the case of Santos Rodriguez. In 1973, Santos was a 12-year-old boy in the fifth grade at William B. Travis Elementary School. According to his mother and community, Santos was a studious, quiet type, who lived with his grandfather and brother David in Little Mexico. On July 23, 1973, Santos and his brother returned home from playing in Pike Park around 10 p.m. and were in bed by 11. In the early hours of the next morning, local policeman Roy Arnold responded to a burglary report at the former Fina gas station at 2301 Cedar Springs Road and saw two boys fleeing the scene. He assumed the boys to be brothers David and Santos. Without a warrant or probable cause, Arnold and Officer Daryl Kane made their way to the home of Carlos Menes, a man who did not speak any English, and the two apprehended the two boys still in their pajamas and drove them to the rear of the Fina station for an impromptu interrogation. Questioning the boys for a crime they did not commit, Officer Daryl Kane placed a .357 Magnum revolver to the head of Santos Rodriguez. Still, as the 12-year-old boy could not answer the officer's questions to his satisfaction and pled his innocence, Kane, in a game of Russian roulette, pulled the trigger twice. Santos was dead. Today, on behalf of my classmates and I, we ask that as a primary step that a marker be placed at the site of the murder. As gentrification seeps into the former Mexican community, a marker at the site of the murder would provide a small yet necessary education concerning the city's conflicted past with police brutality and race relations. While it does not come close to justice for Santos, it is a step forward on behalf of the city to acknowledge our faults. However, Santos' case speaks to a larger issue within the community. In a time where only 5 years ago, Dallas was ranked as the third worst city for police brutality in the nation, we need police officers who reflect our values as a city. This begins with an honest assessment of the depth of implicit bias education for our police department. Is 7 to 8 hours every few years enough? Is it enough when systemic racism and discrimination are grossly inherent institutions of our nation, much less our city? I call upon the body to reflect upon the horrific tragedy of Santos Rodriguez and use this to question our standards today. When a community comes to terms with the mistakes of its past, it is then, and only then, a city can truly progress. Thank you.
Council Member Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First, I want to commend all three of the students for coming down and passionately talking about issues that are not only important to you, but too important to us as well. Mr. Khan, I want to thank you for coming down and talking about the importance of what happened, the tragedy that happened here in the city of Dallas many years ago. And I want to give you an update. We had a task force on Confederate monuments who were looking at what should be done and make recommendations to the council in terms of how we should address some of the Confederate monuments that have been up. And one of the recommendations that came back from the task force was related to Mr. Alan Brooks in a way in which we honor him, and the council agreed that something should be done. Staff's in the process of determining what is the best way to acknowledge what happened to him. It was an honor. It was a stain on this city and the history of this city. And so I wanted you to know that the city takes that very seriously, and we're in the process of addressing that and providing something in this city to recognize the stain that took place on this city. Thank you again for coming down and for your classmates. And I think we should give those students a round of applause for adequately representing and addressing those concerns.
Councilmember Narvaez.
Thank you, Mayor Medrano. Thank you, Mr. Thomas, for addressing the first speaker. Those sentiments are accurate and correct, and so I also want to thank you all for coming and speaking about Mr. Brooks. For the second speaker on the LGBT issues, I just wanted to also update you all that the City of Dallas now for I think the past 4 years has received a 100% score on the HRC equity equality score. So you can go to hrc.com to look at that for the changes that we have made here in the City of Dallas. And that's thanks to the City of Dallas's LGBT task force, which was started about 11 years ago. I've been a member since the beginning, before I was on the City Council. And now you can also look at this council and see that you have three openly gay men who serve on this City Council, which is not something that hasn't happened before in our history. So that's something historic for our city, and also shows the changes that have happened. The other thing that I was going to mention to you all is that some of the things that you mentioned from the past, there's a lot of great organizations here in the City of Dallas, like Lambda Legal, the HRC, the Resource Center, and many, many more, Abounding Prosperity, Rainbow LULAC, that can also help with those types of issues that you're working on. And as youth, the Resource Center does have a youth organization that they work, that they maintain. So if y'all want to get more involved that way. Also, if you all want to get involved with the City of Dallas's LGBT task force, it is open to the public, and you can email myself or Mayor Medrano, and we'll get you on that email so you can start to come to the meetings. And I can guarantee you we would love to have some youth voices so that we can hear your perspective on things that are happening with inside the community. So I also applaud you for being able to come down here and be brave enough to speak on LGBT issues. As far as the education portion goes, I will definitely take those comments and talk to my DISD trustees that represent my district. But I would also recommend that if y'all have the opportunity to go down to one of the DISD trustee meetings, they happen, I think, is it Thursday evenings at the second and fourth Thursdays of the month. So I would definitely recommend y'all do that. As far as Santos Rodriguez, another update is that this council in the last term approved for the recreation center at Pike Park, so inside of what used to be Little Mexico, to be renamed the Santos Rodriguez Recreation Center at Pike Park. So that's one marker that's going to be done, as well as an art piece that's being worked on right now, and that was under the leadership of Mayor Medrano that we were able to get that successfully approved and passed. And just so you all know, nothing else will be done. We actually went to Santos's mom, who lives in my district, and we spoke with her in her living room and asked her exactly what did she want, what did she think was the thing that needed to be done, and she specifically asked for the recreation center to be named, and then some kind of an art piece to recognize, to honor him for the future for anyone that wanted to come by. So just wanted to let you all know that we have been working on a lot of these issues, and I definitely thank you all for coming down here. I love seeing that many youth coming down to talk to us here at City Council. We don't get to see you all too often. And then the last thing I just want to plug is that we also have a youth commission for the City of Dallas. So if there's any openings, check with your council members and see if you can get appointed. We kind of call it the Junior City Council, and they're dealing with a lot of these issues, and then they come back to us to give us recommendations on things that they think need to be done inside of the City of Dallas when it comes with a youth perspective. So once again, thank you. And I would say applaud y'all again, but we already did it. So just act like we're applauding you again. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
William Hopkins.
Do y'all have that, what a City of Dallas sued the RS Lead plant? Do y'all have that, Mara? Do you have it, Madrona? Eric, probably in the back room hiding. The mayor in the back room right now. The people dying in West Dallas. He's supposed to be from West Dallas. Y'all talking about Alan Brooks and the Hispanics and all that. Y'all want to wait 100 years. And Casey, it's been over 100 years since Alan was hung, and now y'all working on something after 100 years. I was asking about Alan Brooks at the county last year. I was trying to find out where his body. They brought his body to the city. I was trying to find out where his body was located. I couldn't find out. People dying in West Dallas. Nobody he talk about the gays, but he never said nothing about the people dying in West Dallas. He over our district. Anything about gays, he out front, like he said. Madrona, your family helped the Hispanics move out of the housing authority in West Dallas in the 70s. They moved to Little Mexico. Your family helped them, so you know. Eric Johnson know, because he was a state representative. And on the second sheet, it's got the state and the city. Eric was a state representative. He already know. That's why he in the back now. He is corrupt, and they paying him. Fred Byron, Russell Budd, Dorothy Budd, and Lisa Blue are the Fred Byron law firm is paying him. They paying the media. They paying the Ku Klux Klan media, not to say nothing. I've been down here 20 years, Madrona. 20 years, man. The media, Dallas Morning News, won't say nothing about the blacks dying in West Dallas. Anything about the media, about the dogs. Other week, him and Broadnecks, the city manager, lady come down here said something about a dog died. Broadnecks said he gonna put it on a full agenda. Eric Johnson said he gonna put it on a full agenda. But when I come down here to talk about blacks dying, the city manager can't say nothing. Eric Johnson don't say nothing. None of y'all, nobody say nothing about the blacks dying. But when you say something about a dog or gays, everybody got in Tenille. He been to Merrill. Eric Johnson been. I mean, Casey Johnson been to Merrill. Black Merrill. Madrona, your family know the people dying in West Dallas. You can sit up there and let us die if you want to. And the rest of y'all whites, y'all take up a care of the dogs and the gays. The people dying in West Dallas, city manager, Mr. Broadnecks, and you said something about the dogs. I'm going to see if you can say something about the blacks that's dying in West Dallas like you said something about the dogs, man. And I'll be back next month.
Thank you.
Linda Bates. Linda Bates. Not present. Nicholas Fields.
Good morning, y'all. My name is Nicholas Fields, and I live in the Cedar Crest community of Dallas. Today, I would like to describe issues pertaining to my community, which is commonly known as Cedar Crest. Over the past few years, myself and many other residents are of the viewpoint our neighborhood has taken a slide. New home construction is up. Home prices are on the rise. Property taxes are at record highs for 2019 and 2020. The diversity of the neighborhood is changing. Sounds like all good things. They are, in fact, good things. However, the incidents of litter, code violations, illegal dumping, homeless traffic, lack of city employee accountability, untimely response to golf course maintenance requests, and lackluster road maintenance have presented challenges within our neighborhood. In terms of litter and illegal dumping, the incidence of litter in the city in general is quite prevalent. It's unacceptably prevalent. In my neighborhood in general, it has become a major issue in addition to illegal dumping. There are particular areas in Track 4 that look like third world countries. For example, on any given day, you can travel down South Home Street or Cleveland Street and find a trash situation that is completely out of control. You will find drug use, large quantities of people with open containers, loitering or trespassing on private property. These individuals also use these properties to set up temporary home encampments and party areas where they leave massive amounts of litter and dump materials such as mattresses, shopping carts, human waste, sofas, etc. These cases described are viewed by the city as acceptable lawlessness because of their geographical location within the city. That's a question. I highly doubt such civic disregard as well as lawlessness would be tolerated elsewhere. The things that I just described are almost all crimes or city ordinance violations. However, they are allowed to continue. The consequence of this unchecked behavior ends up in our roadways, and in particular in my neighborhood. We get the litter, the homeless traffic, the dumping, the excessive foot traffic from non-residents, mostly because there's few locations in the city where this behavior is allowed to exist. This behavior surrounds a few liquor stores, drug apartments, a pawn shop, and two motels. These are the only few places left, at least in my community, where these behaviors can take place. Worse, however, is that it seems to be perfectly acceptable when I speak to anyone from a government body. There is no solution or plan of action or really anything other than that is just the way that it is. For me, that's not an acceptable way forward. Code violations are another issue we have been having within the city adequately addressing. Residents put in multiple tickets and get a slow response or no response at all. Worse, I have witnessed employees clearing tickets with obvious violations present, then get a no violation found email shortly thereafter. I've heard countless excuses as to why issues in terms of code have not been addressed. What I see very little of is citation writing, documenting cases, getting proactive follow-up emails or phone calls with resolutions of specific issues. I see active violations everywhere from street-related issues to missing light poles, litter and dumping to road obstruction on bridges. However, it's not very difficult to find a city truck parked static in my area. Even when you can quantify and confirm inadequacies or lapses of responsibility on the city's part, I never get a sense that there is any accountability.
Your time is up.
Thank you.
Thank you. This concludes your first five registered speakers, Mr. Mayor. We'll now move to your voting agenda. Agenda item one is approval of minutes of the January 8, 2020 City Council meeting.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye. Any opposed? Item is adopted.
Before we move to your consent agenda, there are several individuals who have signed up to speak on consent agenda items. We'll begin with consent agenda item number 7, Will Toler. Mr. Toler, you'll be given 3 minutes to speak.
Hello, Mr. Mayor, and thank you to the council for allowing me to be heard. My name is Will Toler. I am a native of Dallas, Texas, of District 10 and of Lake Highlands, and I live at 9709 Hillview Drive. And 2 years ago, thanks to Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Adam McGue and thanks to the Dallas Morning News' Sharon Grigsby, I became known as the Millennial Solving Dallas's Property Tax Nightmare. And I claim that title because my work to be a pro bono and now nonprofit specialist, my specialty is helping low-income, at-risk, single-family residences access housing security, and I do everything free of charge to my clients. And in my professional opinion, with concerns to the NEZ program, I think the NEZ program has the potential to improve the quality of life for residents of Dallas for generations to come. And I read, Mr. Mayor, section 3.3D of the City of Dallas Rules and Procedure Manual only prohibits stamping of feet, whistling, and yelling, and as y'all have already displayed, it doesn't prohibit a round of applause. I think y'all deserve a round of applause for coming up with this program. The idea of addressing these needs in these at-risk neighborhoods is critical, and unfortunately, I didn't read the memo on how to make a motion, and I don't even know if I'm allowed to make a motion, and that's why I'm here, ladies and gentlemen. is that if you don't read, and I'm sure y'all know this, if you don't read the procedure manual, you're swimming in deep water without a life vest. I am blessing y'all today. I brought the DCAD policy and procedure manual. Did y'all know they had one? They do. Let me read y'all a quick thing. Code 3 is for repairs such as re-roofing and foundation, and code 6 is for minor remodeling. Those only offer contributory values, and contributory values are capped at 10%. For an example, a contributory value is if an owner tears down a garage that's valued at $1,000 and then they build a $3,000 garage, the value is not $3,000, it's $1,500. Another one is that if you do just minor repairs to your home, it's considered not new improvements, it's only considered contributory value, and it adds no value to the property. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm just here to say I am a specialist in property taxes, and there are specialists all over the city and all over this county. And if you're dealing with people's title and people's home and you haven't read the procedure manual, you're swimming in deep water without a life vest. I want to offer one thing. I pray that y'all will never put a homeowner in a position where they need my help to solve their tax problems. But if they call me, I will make the answer and I will do everything I can to help them. And again, I believe the NEZ program has a chance to change the quality of life for neighbors for the better. But I hope everybody will do their reading. Thank you so much.
Deputy Mayor Pro Tem, Adam McHugh.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Will, I just want to say thank you for not only coming down and speaking today, but for all the work you've done in certainly Hamilton Park community, in West Dallas, and other areas across the city. It is a need. We're trying to keep people in their homes, trying to help people be able to financially sustain their living and improve their quality of life, and you're doing an amazing job, and I really appreciate all your efforts and your passion for doing so. Thank you for that. Mr. Mayor, I have one other comment. I just want to recognize that the Dallas Young Lawyers Association and the leadership class is here today, led by Mark Melton, our chair of the Judicial Nominating Committee. I want to recognize and appreciate y'all being here. The DAYL leadership class was my first leadership step in the city of Dallas, and so I certainly appreciate all those engaged and involved in that. Thank you, Mr. Melton. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Councilwoman Arnold.
Thank you. Good morning. I have the pleasure also of meeting Mr. Toler, and you made one mistake. You met me at the bottom community meeting, and so now we've got to get to work. So I've sent my staff here. You know, I love to work people. So, but I appreciate your commitment to serving in that community, because we really do need help, and we need support. We need partnership. So I was very impressed by your enthusiasm and your just willingness to serve, and so I did want to put that on the record. That I appreciate you so much stepping up to the plate. So wait just a few minutes so my staff can meet you so we can secure some of that information. And it's on like neck bones. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember.
Councilmember Gates.
I had a question on another item, another consent item. So, but I don't know if anybody else wanted to speak to number 7. So, can I?
No. Not yet.
Okay.
We'll now move to your remaining speakers. There was a cancellation, but we do have 8 individuals who have signed up to speak on agenda item 20. When I call your name, will you please come forward and have a seat on this front row in this center section? Robert Shaw, Mara Shire Fleming, Catherine Paulson, Jerry Little, Bukekal Dibe, Brian Finkelstein, Melissa Welch, Buzz Dietchman, Robert Shaw, you may approach the podium and you may begin.
My name is Robert Shaw and I live at 7032 Judy Street. My home is a few blocks away from the proposed, away from the Silver Line track. I am not here to discuss the devastation of the Silver Line will have on my neighborhood. I'm also not here to discuss the huge negative impact to home values and local businesses. Would you send your child to a Montessori school whose playground is just inches away from a train track? and I'm also not here to talk about serious safety issues. But what I am here to talk about is the delivery of little brown boxes, freight. What's before us is a proposed discussion about whether DART should be allowed to deliver freight. Certainly, the Silver Line schedule should be allowed to change based on ridership. Ridership, not freight. However, if DART is allowed to engage in contracts to deliver little brown boxes, then any attempts of my neighbors to change that schedule will be stopped by contractual obligations by DART to deliver little brown boxes. It is expected that trains will run as frequently as every 20 minutes in my neighborhood. If those trains are empty, then DART is contractually obligated to support that schedule based on the delivery of little brown boxes. Please allow our neighborhood to solicit changes to DART to schedule changes based on ridership and not be limited by the contractual obligations to deliver little brown boxes. Please make decisions to support DART's current mission of delivering people, not little brown boxes. Thank you very much.
Marcia Fleming.
Hi, I'm Maura Schreier Fleming. I live at 7028 Judy Street, 75252. I'm the president of the Highlands of McCamey 4 and 5 HOA. We live south of Frankfort. Hillcrest is on the west. McCallum is on our south. And Meandering Way bisects our neighborhood. We're in between Hillcrest and Coit. And I first want to say thank you for the council. You have a very hard job. And then I want to recognize the Highlands of McCamey homeowners 4 and 5 who are here. Would you raise your hand, please, if you're from Highlands of McCamey 4 and 5? Because I wanted the city council to know just how important this issue is for them to come all the way down from, you think, Oklahoma to here today to speak. So I would like to encourage the city council to sign this interlocal agreement. I have three reasons why. The first reason is that it is patently unsafe to run freight through a densely residential neighborhood. And you may be familiar with some of the accidents that have come from freight. This was an article that was highlighted by the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen. It was in the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. And they started by saying almost half the people, which is 45% in Tarrant County, live close enough to railroad tracks to be at risk if a derailment spills hazardous cargo, yet there is no way for residents to know what trains carry through their neighborhoods. And since 9/11, because terrorists can target hazardous freight, they don't identify hazardous freight. And if you think maybe Dallas doesn't have so much hazardous freight or freight, most Tarrant County rails are busy. The busiest with 21 to 30 trains a day are tracks that run from the Dallas County border. So that's the number of trains, and the accident that they refer to in this article, one of which was the train carrying chlorine gas, which is crucial for water purification all over the country in trains, derailed south of San Antonio. A conductor and two people in a nearby neighborhood died from inhaling the fumes. And then there was the accident, the derailment in South Carolina that killed 9 people and prompted a mile-wide evacuation. Congress was contacted by Texas legislators because of the danger, and they found that 4 blocks from Congress they had hazardous freight, so they prohibited it. If it's good enough for Congress to prohibit it, it should be good enough for us to prohibit it, so for Dallas. And one of my neighbors, who was supposed to speak today but couldn't come, she wrote me an email last night, the two middle schools right of Dickerson are super close to the rails, too. It will be just a matter of time when kids walk down there and get caught between the sound walls and run over by a train. Now, I think it's unsafe to run 60 to 90 trains a day at street level over a walking trail and delaying emergency vehicles into my neighborhood of 247 homeowners. But you don't have to trust me. The Federal Railroad Administration says that in collisions and fatalities, highway road grade crossing collisions from 2018, Texas leads the nation in those fatalities and injuries. So I encourage you to sign this interlocal agreement.
Catherine Paulson.
Mayor Medrano and fellow city council members, my name is Catherine Paulson. I live at 7026 Rocky Top Circle, Dallas, Texas, 75252, approximately 1/4 mile from the Silver Line Trail and where the freight interlocal agreement needs to be signed. I'm speaking specifically about the abhorrent disregard that DART has had for the taxpayers and residents of this area with our concern to safety, quality of life, financial impact, and their disregard for the recommendations of this city council in the Natinsky plan. The impact on the quality of life was 60 to 90 trains from 4 a.m. to 2 a.m. That's 22 hours a day, is significant to our neighborhood. As Mara mentioned, the south entrance to our neighborhood, the only entrance to the neighborhood of 250 people, is on Meandering Way. If freight trains were to go across this, the delay of the safety vehicles to get into our neighborhood is unimaginable. It could be minutes. Minutes saves lives. The financial impact to our homes from the Silver Line itself is significant. If you put freight in there, the neighborhood is completely off the map when it comes to the value of our homes. And the safety. As you said, we have the walking trail there, and we have a high Jewish population, and there's a lot of walkers. It's not that they necessarily walk by choice, they have to walk. So there will be safety concerns there also. Finally, regarding DART's disregard for the recommendations of this city council and the Natinsky plan, initially DART was going to put in a light rail. Now they're putting in diesel. The city council requested a trench. They couldn't do that. From their EIS report, our primary concern was the liability associated with the three pump stations. I thought DART's primary concern was the safety of its taxpayers and our citizens. That doesn't seem to be the case. Regarding the betterments, DART has said they would put in sound walls on this area in Dallas. On the last proposal, they had 6-foot chain link fences behind a nursery school. This is not safe. Regarding the freight, they've said, we don't need to have this interlocal agreement, we're just not going to do it. I don't trust DART. Everything that they've shown, they've gone back on their word. They found a way to finagle a way in there and get their way. It's all about the money for them. I think the disregard of their own proposals, disregard of this council's recommendations and the Natinsky plan indicate they're going to get it done. If we do not legally bind them with this interlocal agreement, they're going to find a way to get freight in there, and we're all going to be unhappy. Thank you.
Jerry Little. Jerry Little, not present. Bukekal Dibe, not present. Brian Finkelstein.
My name is Brian Finkelstein. I live at 7118 Wester Way, Dallas, Texas, 75248. I'd like to say first thanks for the mayor, city council, city manager, assistant city manager for serving the city of Dallas. I handed out this sheet just to give you guys a representation of what is reality. DART over time has provided multiple snippets of this piece or that, but within this piece of paper, you have 3 miles of 9 railroad crossings with 7 at-grade crossings. So what this means is you're effectively creating one of the most dangerous areas possible running 7 at-grade crossings. I support the signing of the interlocal agreement between the City of Dallas and DART for her prohibition of freight in North Dallas to never run freight. I will just describe a couple items. Freight trains will literally shut down our neighborhood. If you look at this, this is 3 miles. Freight trains continue to improve in distance, so they're 2 miles plus. If you look at that, a freight train literally will shut down our entire neighborhood. Second, safety risk. We currently have limited ambulances in our area that run now and then at Preston Road, and effectively this will block off the entrance to Brentfield Elementary. Noise pollution. The freight train will cause noise pollution that literally would crush any mitigation measurements that DART has tried to enact. And diesel pollution. With everything trying to go green, I'm unclear why they're pushing a diesel train to go straight through our neighborhood. So I support the signing of an interlocal agreement. Just to follow up on a couple of design changes and what I guess citizens have gone through. In 2006, the City of Dallas passed a resolution, the Natinsky Plan, which someone alluded to earlier. It was light rail, below grade, all the reasons that we're up here today, safety, etc. So how much do residents have to give up? Currently, it was below grade, now in everything in a trench, now it's all at grade and they're going above. And the only person, since clearly DART doesn't take any input, since a ton of us have been to meetings, is the city council. And clearly the city of Dallas resolution, DART, we've talked numerous times, but it clearly thinks that DART does not have to do anything with the city of Dallas resolution. I'm not for sure if this is the one time where this is an actual instance that they're pushing back, but we've had to fight just to get a 15-foot wall when clearly you guys had disclosed it would be included. I'm unclear why we've had to go to meetings upon meetings upon meetings just to try to fight for what was provided. And this is all rational, right? The city of Dallas pays DART $300 million per year. They put in $6 billion over time. I'm unclear of what DART's real purpose is, but it should be transportation and safety. And I support the 10% design, because if you go to the 30% design, it's going to create even more issues in our neighborhood with noise, et cetera. And I wanted the city of Dallas resolution all at or below grade, but if 10% is it, then I support that. Thank you.
Melissa Welch.
Hello, I'm Melissa Welch. I'm at 6701 Caulfield, and I just want to speak again about the safety of this train track that's trying to run through and the fact that the little brown boxes could possibly be put on there. Since this had begun back with the Natinsky plan, the promise to the city and the residents was that it was going to go through a tunnel, and then it was going to be trenched, and now we're up to a 10% or 30% grade and freight. And so I'm having an issue why the city of Dallas doesn't hold DART accountable for the things that they've promised and why we have to keep fighting just to get basic promises upheld. So I think the interlocal agreement is the most minimum thing that could be promised, because there are schools right there, the middle school and the elementary school, and it's a neighborhood where kids walk to school. Telling kids not to cross over train tracks is not what works. Kids get very curious when they're told not to do something. So the students are of safety to me. And then also the police. I know a lot of the drawings show a dance studio, but across from that dance studio is our police station. So I haven't quite figured out how the police are supposed to get across the train track if there's an emergency. And I know that if I have something really scary to be calling 911, I want the police there in 30 seconds quicker, or a minute and a half quicker. And then the EMTs, I know Dr. Gamber works with the EMTs trying to cut down their response time to get people back to the ER, and I don't see why EMTs should be waiting for a train. I don't think there's anyone that's against transportation, trying to come up with the east-west route, but going through a residential neighborhood is not safe, and I just think that all the cities could work together to find a compromise to come up with a better route. Thank you.
Buzz Dietchman.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, the City Council, Mayor Medrano. My name is Buzz Dietchman. I live at 17205 Westerway Court. I've lived there since 1985, and my home is immediately track adjacent to the Cotton Belt Rail line. To date, over 120 owners situated like myself, track adjacent and near adjacent to the rail, have sent DART pre-suit notices that they plan on suing DART if it persists in their at-grade plan for their railroad. To date, not a single track-adjacent owner is supporting DART in its current plan. DART had agreed to go below grade back in 2006 at the advice of the City Council, part of the Natinsky plan. They have reneged on that promise, as they have on many promises along the way. The head of DART, Gary Thomas, made an open public statement that under no conditions would DART consider an alternative that would be safer or cheaper than running at grade, such as a tunnel. And tunnels are not unknown to DART. In fact, DART made, as part of its application for its $908 million loan, to say that a tunnel was feasible, but it was just too darn expensive, $511 million. Gary Thomas admitted that he had no clue how much it would cost to tunnel, nor was the $511 million supported by any type of formal bid. In fact, ladies and gentlemen, logic has not proven to be a good way to talk to DART. Nothing has really worked. All the safety issues, everything, the destruction of property values, nothing has worked. Putting the rail line below grade, particularly in a tunnel, is cost effective. We know because of the Trinity Mills watershed tunnel being built right now, we know the cost of a tunnel. So here's something radical. Here's an idea that I came up with because I've been fighting this for quite a while. Consider as a compromise an alternative. Please enter into the interlocal agreement, but consider adding this to the agreement. Language such as resolve that if DART utilizes the tunnel for the portion of the Silver Line that crosses North Dallas by placing the rail underground, commencing on the east with a ramp leading to the tunnel, with a terminus to the west at the Knoll Trail Platform Station for a total of 2.2 miles, the prohibition against running freight in North Dallas shall be lifted. In fact, this is a financial carrot that will persuade DART to do the right thing and solve all the issues that the previous speakers have been troubled by, myself included. Thank you so much for your time. Excuse my voice. I'm 2 weeks down with the flu, but I understand I'm not contagious.
Okay. This concludes your speakers on item 20, Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Mendelson.
Thank you for allowing me to speak. I didn't pull this item because there's nothing new. This has been discussed at council, and there have been resolutions. DART has voluntarily said they give up their right to run freight, and previous councils have passed unanimously resolutions also requiring DART to give this up. So this is really just to memorialize something that's already been done, which is why I didn't pull it. I do want to thank you all for coming down. I know I spent an hour and 20 on the tollway this morning, so I imagine you did as well. And thank you for your advocacy in keeping our family safe and for the quality of life. I appreciate you so much.
Councilmember Kleinman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. Councilmember Mendelson and I are very well aligned on the support for this interlocal agreement that once again tells DART that they will not be running freight on this corridor. DART has made many promises to that regard, and to some degree it's a kind of belts and suspenders, but we do want to make sure that that's in place. I do want to clarify a few things that were commented on. The Natinsky plan from 2006, if anybody would like to see it, I'm happy to send you a copy of it. It does not have a tunnel in it, and it was a public-private partnership that was going to be paid for by using a huge TIF along the entire corridor, and that's why it came forward, because that was the funding opportunity. It was and that plan, regardless, is as dead as the Trinity Parkway plan at this point. So we do have an EIS that's been approved, an environmental impact statement, and we're moving forward on that. It is our role as council members to protect this neighborhood and mitigate the impacts as best as we can, but not to stop the transportation need in North Dallas, which it is great. North Dallas has a transit desert up there. I also want to address some of the issues that people have talked about with regards to public safety at these intersections. One of the things that we worked very hard with DART to do was to do grade separations on Coit and on Hillcrest. So on Hillcrest, by our North Central Station, the traffic lanes actually will go below the track, so there will not be any interruption of traffic at either Hillcrest or Coit by the trains, and that's something that we worked very hard to get, especially at Hillcrest, because it wasn't warranted. And Councilmember Mendelson and I are working very diligently with DART to make sure that they comply with their original 10% design that included being at grade and not raising those crossings any higher than necessary. With regards to the other component with regards to freight, and it's a simple irony here that we really don't want to do, is if DART doesn't put this line in, then freight will return because DART will have no use for it. And we have to recognize that. So unfortunately, trying to stop it completely actually would probably return more freight service to this line, which was very active before DART acquired this line about 30 years ago and spent decades moving freight off of it. So we're in a situation here where we're getting transit from North Dallas, and we're going to make sure that DART does not run freight on it, and we're going to do our best to mitigate any of the impacts to the neighborhood and support you. Thank you.
Councilmember Narez.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I am definitely in support of this to help protect neighborhoods and want to make sure it's done. And the reason for it is I have extreme experience with this. I represent District 6, and West Dallas is twice as wide as the 3 miles that y'all are trying to deal with. It runs. We have Union Pacific. It runs through 4 neighborhoods. All of these neighborhoods back up to the rail lines. They block traffic with the freight constantly. There's up to 500 trips a day, 24/7. So, you know, y'all at least are, you know, getting a difference there. It does create extreme traffic when Union Pacific decides to stop in the middle of a lane. All of a sudden, I have residents that can't get through Hampton. They can't get through Vilbig. They can't get down Westmoreland. So it also affects the residents of North Oak Cliff and anybody trying to get there, trying to get to the medical district, because through West Dallas is some very major arteries that go from the south into the north. The other issue is we have whistles that have to blow at these intersections. So, you know, so this is now this line is these lines are definitely 100% freight. They were there before we were the city of Dallas, but it does affect neighborhoods, and I will definitely be in favor of this because I do believe that neighborhoods need to be protected. Now, I will say that I would have been a little okay if there was a 10% or 30%, because I got to alleviate something if it was possible, but my understanding is it wouldn't help alleviate any pressure on the freight going through West Dallas, because we need to help alleviate any type of freight pressure that is going through there, because there's not one single stop between the city of Grand Prairie through the entire city of Dallas that this UP line runs through. So I just wanted to let you all know I understand what you all are trying to fight against, because the residents of West Dallas for over 80 years have been dealing with this day in and day out, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But I will definitely be in favor of this interlocal agreement. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. We do have one individual who has signed up to speak on consent agenda item 31. Then Dana Hiremath Van may come forward. Ms. Van, you'll be given 3 minutes to speak. Please state your name and address for the record.
Good morning, His Excellency, Mr. Mayor Medrano, Excellencies, Council members, committees, officers of procurement, business diversity. I am extremely grateful to the City of Dallas procurement for each and every opportunity that the city accords to small, women, minority, disadvantaged, historically underutilized businesses. City of Dallas has promoted the capital projects, and I'm going to go directly to the motor fuel project titled BV-19-00011725. I would like to draw the attention that this capital project, usually it is the observation that large multinationals, large organizations are given the award. While we do respect the decisions, but I do want to bring up that small minority women-owned companies who have been delivering factory goods each waking moment of our day in life for 20 years, please give us a simple chance of, even if it is one line appeal or a simple, not necessary, the entire contract. This particular bid capital project is the most, one of the most important, such as motor fuel, a driver of a world commodity that a minority woman-owned company can get a chance. Please do consider the fact millions of man-hours have gone into it, my company, I'm going to speak for the bargain source, we do have a primary refining company who's willing to back us. Its racks wholesale is 10 miles from where the city's requirements, knowledgeable about four quadrants that the city needs, likes the tweaks. So my simple message is, please do consider and give us a simple chance, one-liner, two-liner, whether it's a factory, whether it's a PO, or whether it's a simple, it gives us a chance. I would also like to mention that this is a social cause project. It's a civic consciousness that the health, well-being of each and every individual in the city where this fuel is garnered, delivered, it needs to be safe, knowledgeable, and the 24-hour delivery time, which is the problem and the solution that the company must deliver. I, for one, respect that, but please give us a chance. And number two is, I looked at the award, the consent. My company was $7.3 million, and I was a little concerned.
Your
take
time
a look
is up.
At it, if possible. I did bring the paperwork to support it, and I'm open for questions, any that you feel.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We do have one additional speaker on item 20, Dane Kofer.
Mayor, council members, thank you for taking me slightly out of order due to apparently a snafu on the registration. I first want to start off with a thanks for the diligence on the ILA that we've been discussing. I do believe that this has been a hard-fought battle to get to. DART was initially very hesitant to even enter into an ILA, believing that other requirements were necessary that fulfilled the restriction on conducting freight. But this is but one plank in a bridge between the chasm of what we need to satisfy the needs in far North Dallas. Dallas City Council hammered out a resolution that DART today still refers to as preferences or what they would like to see. I would humbly beseech you to remind you that your power to mandate how DART implements within the city of Dallas derives itself starting from the Texas Constitution through Texas Transportation Code Chapter 452 through the Dallas City Charter as well as the DART bylaws and the DART board policies. And as I said, there are many planks. Just like you would not step upon a bridge with only one plank, there are many other aspects that have been hammered out in that resolution that DART needs to be held to. Currently, going through the Transportation Committee, DART has presented two plans. They call it a 10% plan and a 30% plan. I call this a false dichotomy or a false choice. It's not unlike when you are trying to send your child to bed and you ask them, do you want to go to bed now or do you want to go to bed in 5 minutes? Neither one of them are valid, and neither one of the choices that DART has presented are valid with the requirements of the city resolution. There are multiple elements that they have yet to fulfill, including a metric system for the bus system, a confirmation of a continuous 15-foot wall, plus enhanced sound mitigation. But what recently came to pass was the revelation from the head of DART saying that they had never truly evaluated the tunnel. And what I'm here to present to you is that that solution on its face, if you only look at the construction, might appear more expensive, but if you compare all the other things you trade off for that tunnel, the hundreds of people that have filed suit or plan to file suit, the numerically predictable number of deaths that the federal government estimates at $9 million each, and then the number of more interactions that exist in this line than in the DCTA line, the tunnel over the course of its lifespan would cost less. It is both safer for the residents of Dallas and less expensive for the citizens of this area over the long haul.
Thank you. This concludes your speakers on consent agenda items. Before we move to your consent agenda, we will take up consent agenda item 6. I'll read that item into the record. Item 6, authorized 1, the creation of a residential neighborhood empowerment zone, NEZ program, as authorized under Chapter 378 of the Local Government Code to A, create residential NEZ to support tax abatements for the construction and renovation of single-family homes, duplexes, and multifamily developments located within NEZ, including within tax increment TIF districts, and B, provide development grants in amounts equal to development fees and certain development-related costs to support construction and renovation of single-family homes, duplexes, and owner-occupied multifamily developments located within NEZ. 2, an amendment to the City of Dallas Comprehensive Housing Policy to add the residential NEZ program and delegate authority to the city manager to modify certain elements outlined in the appendix. 3, the city manager to A, utilize tax abatements offered through the city's residential NEZ program authorized under Chapter 378 of the Local Government Code to support construction and renovation of single-family homes, duplexes, and owner-occupied multifamily developments located with NEZ, including within TIF districts, and B, utilize public funding under Chapter 380 of a Local Government Code to provide development grants in amounts equal to development fees and certain development-related costs to support construction and renovation of single-family homes, duplexes, and owner-occupied multifamily developments located within NEZ. 4, the city manager to execute individual tax abatement agreements and other necessary documents up to $50,000 in accordance with the residential NEZ program, including within TIF districts. 5, a one-time transfer of funds from the Dallas Housing Trust Fund to the NEZ Fund in an amount not to exceed $1 million to provide for development grants as authorized by Chapter 380 and 6, an increase in appropriations in an amount not to exceed $1 million from the Neighborhood Empowerment Zones Fund.
Councilmember Basildua.
Thank you, Mayor Medrano. I move to amend the comprehensive housing policy by authorizing the creation of a residential neighborhood empowerment zone program as briefed to City Council with the following changes. Amending the definition of eligible household in Exhibit A by lowering the AMFI for family to 60% for purposes of rentals and clarifying that for purposes of home ownership or purchase, the definition includes those in educational instruction and library occupations, healthcare practitioners, and healthcare support occupations, and protective service occupations, including firefighters and police officers, with a gross household income under 140% AMFI.
Second. So, can we get a copy of what he's reading to everyone, and then also you want to go now in discussion?
That's fine.
Okay, you can go ahead and continue while they get the motion up.
Thank you, Mayor. I was in discussion with the staff in housing and also with some of the feedback that was given as far as the rentals. The 60% drop is something that seems to be desired, and ultimately what would serve this this program, I think, in its best and most efficient way in several of the communities. And then regarding the Second Amendment, it's really to address language so that it doesn't bind us to specific occupations. I know that Councilmember Narvaez raised the question on making sure that nurses were a part of healthcare professionals, and so we wanted to make sure that the language reflected the labor definitions of what these occupations are classified under. So it was just for some technicalities on that Second Amendment. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Councilmember West.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you, Councilman Basildua, for making that amendment. This is an exciting day for affordable housing, and kudos to my colleagues who were here when they passed the comprehensive housing policy to see this part of it roll out today. You know, the city only produces 2% of DFW's new owner-occupied housing that are priced at under $300,000 a year. Put that into numbers. By the third quarter of 2019, Dallas area produced 17,366 homes under $300,000. The city of Dallas, of that number, only produced 412, which is ridiculously low. Today, we're taking a step to change that and change the momentum. Based on the current funding allocation, which frankly isn't enough and we need more for future budgets, we're going to be looking at 125 new homes and 75 reconstructions. But the bigger thing that's coming from this today is igniting the momentum for the private sector and giving them the encouragement to know you can come back from the suburbs where you're building the 300,000 and less homes today, because we want you here, we want these homes, and we're going to put the policies in place to make it easier to build these homes in Dallas. If you'll look at the PowerPoint that's on the city's website, you'll see that for every dollar we invest in this program, we're looking at a $10 return from the private investment, which is key. I'm really excited about the amendment that Councilman Basildua added in to add police, fire, nurses, and teachers to this special program, and to give them a little bit even more incentive to bring them into our neighborhoods. Because frankly, we've been pushing them out of our neighborhoods by rising home prices, and it's time we start bringing them back into our neighborhoods. I wanted to give a shout out to a couple of folks who've worked on this really hard. You know, these programs come up here and they just seem like they're in this beautiful package that we just passed, and months and months, years in some cases of work go into this. So congratulations to David, Pam Thompson, and then also Kendra Nichols and Maureen Milligan for your hard work on the NES program. Thank you.
Councilmember Arnold.
Just for clarification, I am also excited about the opportunity to have NES in District 4 today. But for me, I needed the clarification, if I may direct the question, Mayor, to Councilmember from District 7, Mr. Basildua. Do I have your permission, Mayor?
Yes.
Thank you. On clarification, will there be an opportunity for those who are not mentioned specifically in these categories that fall under the umbrella to also seek access to this program? I know we spoke specifically about education, instruction, and library, which we call media today, but would that include counselors and the protective forces? Would that include marshals?
Yes, so the specifics of firefighters and police officers was to make sure that it was known that that is what is included within the protective service occupations. There are many others, but we wanted to make sure that that wasn't missed, that public safety was brought in, because that was a question that was asked whenever we originally had just that language. And then, again, it was going to what is coded within the labor's classifications, so that it is more broad instead of saying an educator or a counselor. And so it's going to be any within those realms of profession.
All right. I just wanted to make sure, because counselors are not instructional, but I wanted to make sure we weren't leaving them out, and there is a way to access these programs, and we do leave the marshals out of our conversation from time to time.
Yep. No, okay. All the examples you just asked about are included in this language. And I also, just to clarify as well, this is the reason taken up before consent was so that it is for all of the NES zones and not individually pushed for each of them. So when we were to go to the consent and to pass, this language would reflect for all NESs that come through today.
All right. Well, I'm excited about your advocacy for these groups, and I'm just really excited, and we'll talk about that if I get a chance, on the work that this team has done with the NES, especially in District 4. I'm really excited about that today. Thank you.
Councilmember Narayez.
Thank you, Member Drano. I wanted to say that I am going to be in support of the item as well as the amendment. I want to thank my colleague, Mr. Basaldúa, for the amendment specifically for clarifying the part that clarifies the purpose of homeownership, which includes the educational instruction, library occupations, healthcare practitioners, and healthcare support occupations, as well as the protective service occupations, including firefighters and police officers. I think this is fantastic, especially representing West Dallas and the design district, with West Dallas being having one of the NESs that's going to be in there. A lot of people don't realize how many folks work in the medical district that live or want to live in the West Dallas area. The complex that I live in is full of younger professionals that are working. They're either nurses, they do some kind of support staff, they're studying to be doctors, and the reason that they like and enjoy living in West Dallas is because it's just across from the medical district, where they may be out, they're priced out if they're in Uptown or North Dallas. They get to, you know, have an opportunity to be there. And many of them are looking at home ownership and what is their next step. And so this is an exciting program that I think will be very successful. And this was something that I had brought up. And I thank Mr. Basaldúa for having heard my comments about the healthcare area because of the economic drive that it's going to bring into West Dallas with our new neighbors and new professionals that are coming in. And especially, and then the other positions are definitely just bonuses for all of us. This is an exciting time. As many of you all know, since I got on this council, I've been talking about not pushing residents out of West Dallas and how do we help bring in new folks, but at the same time supporting our residents that built West Dallas when they started in these areas over 80 years ago. My family has nearly 90 years of generational ties to West Dallas, and so having something like this gives an opportunity for folks that have lived there. They played by the rules, they worked hard, they paid off their homes, but unfortunately at this moment in time, the taxes are rising so high and so fast that many of them, especially those seniors that did everything right, and they just can't afford the taxes. Many of them, they are now paying more a year in 1 year for taxes than they paid for the home when they originally purchased it. You know, some of them come to me with those concerns, and their incomes are not going up. Their incomes are stagnant because they are on fixed incomes as seniors. Many of them are working families that maybe inherited these homes, but they just don't have the higher paying jobs in the rest of the city. So this is an exciting time for the La Bajada, Los Altos neighborhoods, Greenleaf, and many others that are inside of this NES. And I will be in 100% full support of this. And I want to thank the Housing Committee for taking this and moving this forward. I want to give the entire committee, including our chairman, Mr. West, for continuing this. And I want to thank staff for working so hard and diligently on this. I know that this is something that came up over many years, but 2 years ago I came in talking about this, and I want to especially thank my former chairman when I was on the Housing Committee with him, Mr. Atkins, because he wasn't afraid to look at this and to take charge and keep it going forward. So there were a lot of folks involved in this, but the big winners are going to be the residents that are going to be inside of these NESs across the entire city of Dallas, and that ultimately means that Dallas wins. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Kleinman.
Thank you. I just like 2 points of kind of just clarification. Maybe staff can help with this. First of all, lowering the AMFI to 60% for purposes of a rental, what was the original AMFI in the proposal?
David Noguera, Director of Housing and Neighborhood Revitalization. Originally, when we briefed council last week, it was at 80% AMFI.
Okay. So we're just broadening on the lower end. And then on the second point, where it says clarifying that the purpose of homeownership, and it lists this group, does that mean only this group can participate in the program, or is it just including this group?
So that group, the first responders, the medical practitioners, right, and the educators, was a carve-out that would go up to 140% AMFI. Everyone can participate up to the other AMFIs.
And what's the top end AMFI for other folks that are not in the
120%.
120. So we're just, for this particular group, we're going to 140. Okay, but we can get to 120 for everybody else. So everybody, yes, can participate 60 to 140, and then this particular list, I'm sorry, 60 to 120, everybody in the world.
Correct.
Well, with this change.
No, homeownership. No.
Okay.
So Pam Thompson, Housing and Neighborhood Revitalization. Just to clarify, over the weekend, we contemplated a little more the issue about displacement and recommend that we lower the upper limit for rental housing,
okay,
to be 60% rather than the 80% to provide additional protections for the existing families.
Good.
In those neighborhoods.
Yep.
And then we kept at 120 for ownership. So families who own their homes who earn under 120 and new families who want to buy new construction homes who earn under 120 can take advantage of this program.
Okay.
And then in response to council's request for some additional support for these public service occupations, up to 140%. And to clarify, it was staff's recommendation that we use the BLS SOC codes in order to have a concrete list that these are folks that are, they're standard occupation codes.
Okay.
So what is a teacher? Does that include teaching assistants? Does that include other things? Mm-hmm. So it actually lists out what those various occupations are.
Okay. All right, that's helpful. Thank you very much.
Councilmember Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I first of all, I want to say, you know, to David and his team, thank you for asking us for our input as relate to priorities as relates to housing. I said this in the committee meeting. I'm going to say it here. My number one priority as relates to housing, specifically as relates to District 3, is tools that can prevent gentrification and displacement of current residents. I'm glad that I'll be having a NAS in my district. A lot of my constituents who live in the area of the NAS, the Redbird Lane area, are concerned about, one, potential displacement, gentrification, and then, two, creating an opportunity for young families to be able to move into the area so we can continue to have the quality, the density that we need, and then also the quality as we begin to see, continue to see projects like Redbird Mall, 67 Square, develop to bring the type of quality retail that we need so badly in Oak Cliff. And so I am in support of this. I took a look at the amendment. I want to get a better understanding. Thank you, TC, for that quick chat to help me to understand the rationale as relates to that. We want to make sure anyone who has an opportunity to live in the city of Dallas, and that's our biggest challenge. We have not had enough housing stock and opportunities to have to grow our middle class, and so this is us rolling out the welcome mat. Anyone who's looking to own a home in Dallas, Southern Dallas in particular, this is going to be a tool to help us make that happen. So, Councilmember Bazadua, thank you for your leadership and taking a look at that. I think this is critically important in order for us to make Dallas the type of Dallas that we can all be proud of. So, thank you, and thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Atkins.
Thank you, Mayor. Also, thank you, the Housing Department, Special Housing Committee, Chair West, Chairman West, and also Vice Chair Thomas. But Balladur, also thank you for looking into this. When we did a housing policy as a former chair, we say it was not the best policy, but it's a foundation. And I think that we're still working on the foundation to build those sky rise way up, you know, to the Empire State Building. But we're doing a good job, but we still just got to work and still chipping at it, because this is about housing. We are short of housing. We are building more, getting more business to the city of Dallas, especially Southern Dallas. We also have more companies coming in. Later on, you'll see another company going to create another 324 jobs in District 8. We're moving, as Casey said, in Redbird. We talk about hospital moving in our UT Southwest, Parkland Housing Medical District. Omar, you know, we do doing that, and we do got to make sure we have the housing residents for them. So we are short on housing, but the point is we're not doing a great job to have the housing stock and make sure they stay there. You know, we created many jobs in the city of Dallas, but the suburbs are taking the housing stock and people moving to the suburbs. So this might be the way they would get the police and the first responders to stay in the city of Dallas instead of going to the suburbs. Again, great job. Bowdoin, thank you for writing the amendment. Thank you very much.
Councilmember Gates.
Thank you, Mayor. I want to clarify on question that Mr. Kleinman asked. So we've lowered it to 60%. So to take advantage of this program in a NES, you would have to be offering rental at 60% AMI. Is that correct? Not at 80%?
That's correct.
Okay. So at 80% would not qualify for this program of rental.
Correct.
Okay. And then but for the housing on the 140, it could be anything below 140 as well. I mean, there's that range of 80 to...
Correct. Both all three of these are not to exceed, up to and including 60, up to and including 120, up to and including 140.
Okay. So what is the 60 on the rental? There's a it could be lower than that as well, is what you're saying. Okay. And you feel like, I mean, I understand you're trying to avoid displacement with the 60, so people that are living there could currently come back. And so if something we'll monitor if we create units at that level, right? I mean, it will cost more to the developer to have it at this threshold. I mean, it's an abatement, though, but they still have to put the infrastructure. I mean, they have to weigh with the abatement versus the construction or the rehab would be.
As with any of our programs, the individual developers and the property owners would have to do the math to figure out whether this is effective or not, whether it works for them or not. And as we've promised you with our other programs, that if we find that utilization is low or there are issues that need to be updated, we'll bring those back to you.
Okay, but you think with this change that there will be a market for it and people will take advantage? I mean, I know you said that with 80%. I just want to make sure you've kind of done some homework on that 60%.
Our concern was, frankly, ensuring that we didn't incentivize displacement, because that's the exact opposite of the intention of this program.
Okay. And then my other question, and I know this item 6 is for all the NESs, but specifically, I know I have a NES in Vickery Meadow, which is, we're an area of stabilization, that's item 8, where it specifically talks about that. The map, my concern is the map it on 8 doesn't reflect that area. The map that's in the... Right, it's just one, right, it's more of actually 13 and 14. It doesn't have, I'm sorry, 9 and 14. It doesn't have the 13. So is there a map related to item 6 that includes all the NESs?
There's not, because this is a program.
Okay.
And then council designates the individual NESs that then qualify for the program.
Okay. So in 6, it definitely speaks to the area in Vickery Meadow, but in 8, the map doesn't have that area. So I just want to make sure, and maybe it's because it's not a TIF. Are those the only ones that have to have a TIF? I'm just concerned it's not one of the individual ones as well.
So 8 is Casa View, and 9 is Vickery Meadow.
Well, 9, it doesn't have Council District 13 listed. It only has Council District 9 on the agenda item. And an 8 has Council District 13 listed and not. So I guess it's just a, maybe it's just a correction in the council. I don't know if that needs to be fixed. It's not, that's why I had that question about consent. I should have asked you yesterday, but I was reviewing it again last night.
Ensuring that we have the correct council district with each item is the bane of our existence, and so it is possible that we had a technical error there.
Okay. So do we need to have that changed? I mean, I could pull that item.
That's a city secretary question.
It's correct in the, it's just on that one line. It's what it says count. It doesn't include, you're right, the map is in 9, but it doesn't, on the line that says council district on the item, it doesn't include 13. So maybe I should just pull that and add that.
I don't,
the council districts are listed on the agenda information sheet, which is not a part of the posting, so it doesn't have to be corrected.
Okay, but it does, even though it says on the item.
The AIS sheets need to be corrected. I'm not saying that they don't, but as far as the posting or approving of the item, it doesn't have to be. It doesn't
affect
the item. I just
want to make sure that one is adopted. Okay, answer my question. Thank you.
Councilmember Atkins.
Yes, question to TC and to David and to Chad West, Chairman West. I mean, this is a great program. My problem I have a marketing and let the people know what we're talking about. We're going to pass something. How do residents in the community know what we're passing? So how are we going to let the people in the mayor's district know about the change and how we're going to do it? How are we going to roll this out? I think it's very important because we got great tools in the toolbox, Chairman West, but we need, the people need to know what we're doing and how to apply for it. Right. Or do we got a plan to do that?
Yes.
Do we have dollars to do that, to let the people know? Because what I'm looking at, we pass a whole lot of policy, and we have a whole lot of great tools in the tool shed and tool by the city dollars, but the resident and the police and the first responder, the teacher do not know we have this tool in the toolbox. How would they know what we're doing? We're doing a bad job. We're doing great in this horseshoe and the people who listen, but what about the other resident in the city of Dallas? How are they going to know about it?
So, may I respond?
Yes.
So, thank you, Councilmember Atkins. This question did come up at last Wednesday's briefing, and staff compiled a memo that went out to the council this past Friday, and it lays out a timeline for everything from standing up the application to marketing the program to holding community outreach programs. So all of that will happen and is laid out in that memo.
Could you make sure that all the council members have that strategized, how you're going to strategize this, how we're going to do that, so we can tell our people in our district that we do have this program, you're going to apply for the program, who you need to talk to, what a telephone number, who in charge. I think we got to do a better job
all
to educate.
Yes.
Thank you.
Any other speakers? No. Okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye. Any opposed? Motion is adopted.
We'll now move back to your consent agenda. Your consent agenda consisted of agenda items 2 through 40. Agenda item 5 is being pulled by Councilmember Mendelson. Agenda item 6 was just previously considered. Agenda item 34 is being pulled by Councilmember Mendelson. Therefore, your consent agenda consists of agenda items 2 through 4, 7 through 33, and 35 through 40.
Do we have a motion? We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is adopted.
Agenda item 5, authorize the one sale of up to 99 of the land transfer lots included in and identified as 5 mile clusters 1-6 as shown in Exhibit A to Notre Dame Place Inc. and or its affiliates developer, subject to restrictive covenants, a right of reverter, and execution of all necessary documents pursuant to the city's land transfer program and the new construction and substantial rehabilitation program to release of all non-tax city liens, notices, or orders that were filed on the 99 land transfer lots prior or subsequent to the deeds transferring the lots to the City of Dallas, and three, execution of a loan agreement with the developer and or its affiliates not to exceed $1,600,000. This item was pulled by Councilmember Mendelson.
Thank you, Councilmember Atkins.
Yes, I'm going to defer it for 30 days, and the reason why I'm going to defer it for 30 days, we have a community meeting scheduled.
We need
for
a second. Is there a second?
Second. Yeah.
There's a second.
So we have a community meeting scheduled for the 25th, which this coming started. This item had never been to the community. Briefly went to a couple of people in the community, but the community have called me, have texted me, had emailed and said, what's going on? So I think staff have an obligation to go back to the community, explain what's going on in 5 miles. So I want to defer this for 30 days so the community have a chance to come and voice their opinion. Thank you.
Councilmember Kleiman.
I just like to move forward on housing opportunities and don't really, I just don't really support delays. If this delay is just for 30 days to bring it back and get it sorted, I guess I understand that. But we need this housing desperately in the city, and I'm hopeful that after this community meeting, we can move this project forward. Thank you.
Okay, no other speakers. All those in favor of the deferral for 30 days, say aye. Any opposed? Motion carries.
Agenda item 34. Authorize supplemental agreement number 6 to the subscription contract with Workday, Inc. to amend the scope of services and decrease the contract amount not to exceed $366,454.79 as a decrease. This item was pulled by Councilmember Mendelson.
Councilmember Mendelson.
I just have a couple questions.
You want to make the motion?
I don't want to make
okay.
the motion yet.
Does someone want to make the motion?
Move approval.
Okay, got a motion and a second? Okay. Councilmember Mendelson, your
Thank
turn.
You. So my question is, I've heard a number of complaints about pay for firefighters because they're on a 24-hour schedule, and I'm just wondering if this new software will be able to accommodate that.
The new software, Workday, will make vast improvements in what we're able to do in terms of firefighter pay accuracy. I know there have been concerns, and we've been working through a lot of those concerns, in part because, as you note, they have the most complicated scheduling and pay environment of any of the employees in the city, even more complicated than police, for example, because of the 24-hour schedule and the 28-day pay cycle. So there are a couple of things that this system is going to do. First of all, it is going to automate several previously manual processes. That will be a tremendous help in terms of pay accuracy. It's also going to give us more edit checks and error messages. It will provide an audit trail of transactions within the system, and it's going to give us quality control capabilities that we don't currently have in our end-of-life Lawson system, which is quite old. And so all of those things are good and will help us meet and resolve some of the issues the city auditor has pointed out in the past. We also are going to have greater verification from the employees of their pay accuracy. So the pay stub from this system is very clear. We've gone over it with the associations, and they have said that it is clear and will help in terms of members being able to identify any errors. So there are a couple of other pieces that are not exactly this system and this contract that will help in this way. Telestaff is a system that is specifically designed for those complex scheduling activities. We are also bringing on Telestaff. It will integrate with Workday. And so right now we have a system we call IDS. That's what's done for the scheduling. We will transition that, not at the exact same time we take Workday live, but we will transition to Telestaff as well. So that'll improve or give us a good way to do that piece of things. And then finally, The Workday system is in the cloud, and so they are updating it continuously, and we just receive all of those updates. We don't have to contract for those updates. This fall, they issued a patch for 28-day overtime, and so the system will be able to do that as well, which it did not previously have. So we feel like all of these pieces together are going to really help us to correct some of the errors. Now, I would never guarantee that things would be perfect, and so that's why we ask for every employee, uniform or civilian, to check their pay stub every time to alert us to anything they may see, particularly in police and fire, but particularly in fire, because of the difficult schedule, because of certification pay and other types of assignment pay. When those things change, or when someone gets a new certification, or perhaps their certifications change, it's really incumbent on them to make sure that we're recording all of that correctly and we get their pay correct, because I want to pay everybody correctly, but there are some complexities that the system is just not going to know about if, for example, someone has a new certification and we need to change which certification pay they're getting.
Thank you so much for recognizing that and for making sure that the system will accommodate it. Thank you.
Councilmember Gates.
Thank you, Mayor. Ms. Reich, I have a question on this as well. How about with communicating with the pension? I know there's been some questions about, you know, the pension, you know.
We've worked very, very closely.
So will this help that relationship?
Yes. In fact, we have the pension, we have the ERF pension as one of our stakeholders on the board, so we've had input from pension on, when I say board, I mean we have a project management committee, essentially, of executives overseeing it. And so Cheryl Alston has been informed of everything, and we've kept her involved. We've also been working closely with Kelly Goschalk at the Police and Fire Pension, in particular, making sure that we're correcting any issues that may have occurred with deductions, and that we're making the pension whole, even if the city has to then correct things on our end. We are working to make the pension whole as quickly as possible so they have all the money that they should have and are able to invest that for the return.
Okay. So I in the past, I knew there was some...
Oh, I agree.
The communication or talking back and forth and the benefits were not clear. So this will help with all benefits as well. And
it will. The initial release will not have all of the benefit pieces to it. That's going to be a future phase of the project. We did purchase that capability, but right now we're focused on time and attendance tracking, and we're focused on the paycheck and actually the very beginning process of bringing someone on board. Of course, you have to get them into the system. But we'll be bringing on other modules that have to do with benefits and other HRIS issues that we need to have in one system.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilmember Kleiman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Will this system track the shift swapping that's commonly done in the department?
I'm going to ask one of my fire colleagues to help me with shift swapping questions.
Yes, sir. Telestaff is another part of the system that we're looking at. Telestaff gives us the ability to do that.
So, and it gives you the ability. Will you be doing that?
We do it now also.
I know y'all do it like down at the division level or at the station level, but will it be centralized so that command structure can see where the swaps are going on and who's utilizing that?
Right. We currently track that now, but this will also be another tool that allows us to see it a little bit better.
And will it be able to track the actual rank and pay scale of the people that are swapping back and forth?
I'm not sure, because when they swap, it's not any pay involved in that.
Well, right. But if we're getting a first-year rookie to replace a senior high-ranking officer, then we should only be paying for a first-year rookie.
Our officer is not allowed to swap.
Okay,
with
but my point right. being is if people are swapping down the pay scale, then we should only be paying for what we're getting. And so if we're tracking that, then we should be paying the officers that are doing the work for the work they're getting and not paying officers their pay for not being there.
Right. It's not built to do what
not
you're
built
asking.
To do that.
It's built to track the hours between the employees
right.
when they swap.
Well, I'm really concerned, and you and I have talked about this, my concerns about swapping down the scale so that we're not getting the experienced officers that we're paying for because someone swaps a shift with someone that's further down in experience and pay.
We don't allow our officers not to swap with officers. If it's a swap, it'll be with somebody with like in kind. And
okay.
When I say like in kind, I mean the maybe not the same years of experience, but usually the same level of a driver for a driver, a lieutenant for a lieutenant,
okay.
Or
okay.
A fire rescue officer for a fire rescue officer.
Okay, that is part of our general orders or something like that, that it's a same rank?
We try to maintain that.
But is that
yes,
part of your general orders?
No, we don't have general orders in our department. We have
right, okay.
Standard operating procedures.
So is it a requirement in the SOP that you swap the same level, or is it just we try to do that?
We at this particular time, we try to maintain and make
okay,
sure.
Okay, so will this system help us track that better so we can really see that we're getting that?
It does allow to track hours. It doesn't allow us to track a particular person like that, what you're saying.
Okay. Well, I am concerned that we get compliance in that general attempt to swap people at the same level.
Yes, sir. We make sure to check that regularly.
Thank you very much.
All right. No further discussion. All those in favor say aye. Any opposed? Motion is adopted. Thank you.
We'll now move to your items for individual consideration. Agenda item 41 is consideration of appointments to boards and commissions. This morning, we only have individuals, nominees for individual appointments. Those nominees are to the Animal Advisory Commission. Abra Beth Garrett is being nominated by Councilmember Blewett. Ms. Garrett meets the general public special qualification. To the Board of Adjustment, Katrina B. Johnson is being nominated by Councilmember Atkins. To the Community Development Commission, Daryl Christopher Herbert is being nominated by Councilmember Arnold. And to the Housing Finance Corporation Board, Robin L. O'Neill is being nominated by Councilmember Basil Dua.
Do we have a motion? Motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is adopted.
Agenda item 42, authorize a business personal property tax abatement agreement with I-20 Distribution Park Phase 1 LLC and Zoom Inc. or an affiliate thereof, Zoom, for a period of 5 years in an amount equal to the city ad valorem taxes assessed as follows. 50% for year one, 40% for year two, 30% for year three, 20% for year four, and 10% for year five in connection with a biodegradable food package processing and manufacturing facility located at 9155 South Link Drive in Dallas, Texas, in accordance with the city's public-private partnership program.
Councilmember Atkins.
Motion to approve. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This is a project, you look at District 8, that we have more jobs coming there. We got to do a better job to get people to work. Omar, thank you for the $15 ceiling. We go higher. These people can be guaranteed $15 an hour. But also, they're going to be run about $40,000 a year, annual salary. But this is going to be about $250 million worth of equipment. It's a new type of a product that they're going to be manufacturing and producing in District 8. And at this time, we have Mr. Peters, the Vice President, Governor from Zoom. I want them to come up and kind of tell about the project, please.
Good morning. Thank you, Councilmember Atkins, Mr.
Right.
Mayor, the rest of the city. I am Brendan Peter from Zoom. Zoom is a company that's focused on addressing food supply inefficiencies and reducing waste in the food system. The project that we've been working on with Councilmember Atkins is intended to build a new manufacturing capability here for us to produce food packaging materials that are fully compostable and made from agricultural waste products to offer to food suppliers and to consumers. The company is built on a promise of offering better alternatives that are more sustainable, and I can't tell you how excited we are to come here to Dallas and begin manufacturing a next great agricultural product here that we're seeing huge demand from the market for.
Thank you. And they do have one large contract. I'm not at liberty to say what is the company got, but here's the product they're going to be manufacturing, and this product do not have to go into the trash bin. You can store it in your garden, and you can degrade a product. It's a good product that you ain't throw in the trash can. So think about that. Your recycling product, you store it in your garden, fertilizer, biodegrader, great. It came from a great design. They do operate in California as now, but the product, the project they building here is going to be over 1 million square foot facility manufacturing. So they're going to be in District 8. So we're moving there. So colleagues on happy and the resident of District 8 are happy, especially on 345 more jobs going to be in District 8. So we need little houses in Valley Building, Chad West. We need more houses in District 8 to make sure that people not moving to the suburb to stay there. Again, thank you, for coming to Dallas and TC. We still got to do a great job of marketing these big companies coming to Dallas all the time. It's all about marketing the city. It's also about the best location is Dallas, Texas.
Thank you.
Councilmember Navarez.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just wanted to tell the company that's coming in, thank you for your diligence and your hard work to make this deal possible and for bringing in jobs that pay a living wage. I want to continue to thank our Economic Development Department for continuing that theme of living wages. When you're asking for taxpayer dollars, it is important that the people that you employ are going to be able to make a living wage. And this is a big congratulations to District 8. We always talk about the South and how we need to invest. Well, we're investing the right way now. And on top of that, Mr. Atkins, you have fought for your district, and I think this is maybe the second or third, and I want to appreciate you also again for standing with me and sticking with me when I brought up living wages and that we needed to have this minimum no matter what, and we should be doing it going forward, and it's because of your leadership that this is happening, and these companies want to come to Dallas because they see that we want to be a partner as long as they're a good partner to us and the residents in our city. And I will top it off. Now we got to get that housing. So I'm going to challenge Mr. West. Get us that housing, sir. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. No further discussion. All those in favor of the motion, say aye. Any opposed? This item passes. Thank you.
Agenda item 43. Authorize a development agreement with HW Commerce Office LP and or its affiliates developer in an amount not to exceed $2,576,125 payable from current and future deep elm tax increment financing TIF district funds in consideration of the Stack Deep Elm project on property currently addressed at 2712 and 2718 Commerce Street in Tax Increment Financing Reinvestment Zone Number 12, Deep Elm TIF District, and to an increase in appropriations in an amount not to exceed $2,576,125 in the Deep Elm TIF District Fund, not to exceed $2,576,125.
Do I have a motion? A second? Any discussion? No discussion. All those in favor? Any opposed? Motion carries.
Mr. Mayor, this concludes your morning agenda.
Okay. Thank you. Before we go, I know we're going to go into closed session. I got to read this statement. But we do have a birthday today. And so I'm going to have Mayor Pro Tem McHugh sing a happy birthday to our city manager, T.C. Broadnecks. It's his birthday.
One, two, three.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear C.C. Happy birthday to you.
First, let me thank everyone for that rendition. And just so you know, I'm smiling on the inside and I'm blushing if you haven't been told. But thank you. I appreciate it. And we should reserve this only for city council members going forward. So thank you very much. I appreciate you.
Okay, it is now 11:08 on January 22nd, 2020. The City Council agenda meeting will now go into closed session under Section 551071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act to receive advice from and consult with the City Attorney on the following matter described on today's agenda: City of Dallas versus Delta Airlines et al. And we are in closed session. Good afternoon. The City Council agenda meeting has completed its closed session under Section 551071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act at 1:05 on January 22nd, 2020. We have returned to open session.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We'll begin with your zoning consent agenda. Your zoning consent agenda consists of just agenda item Z1. I'll read that item into the record. Z1 is a public hearing and an ordinance granting an amendment to and the renewal of specific use permit number 2078 for an industrial outside potentially incompatible use limited to concrete and asphalt crushing on property on the east line of Luna Road north of Ryan Road.
Mr. Mayor, we sent 11 notices to property owners within 500 feet of the area of request. We received 2 replies in favor and none in opposition.
Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to the item that was just read into the record? Any speakers in favor? No speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Narvaez.
Thank you, Mayor Medrano. I move to approve the zoning change as recommended by the City Plan Commission.
Do you have a second? All right, any discussion?
Colleagues, I just wanted to let you all know this is as we continue to get concrete batch plants out of neighborhoods inside of West Dallas. This is located in the Northwest Dallas area in the industrial part of the city. So like use, where it belongs, getting it out of neighborhoods. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. So no more discussion. All those in favor say aye. Any opposed? Motion carries.
Item Z2. A public hearing and an ordinance granting a planned development district for IR Industrial Research District uses and general merchandise or food store greater than 3,500 square feet use on property on the west corner of Mockingbird Lane and Maple Avenue.
Mr. Mayor, we sent 22 notices to property owners within 500 feet of the area of request. We received 5 replies in favor and none in opposition.
Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to the CPC recommendation? Any speakers in favor? We have a speaker coming forward. Please state your name and address for the record. You'll be given 3 minutes to speak.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and council members. My name is Jonathan Vincent, 2323 Ross Avenue, and I'm here today representing Mockingbird Venture Partners, the applicant in this case, and Mr. George Ramirez with MVP is here with us as well. This is a relatively small site for this purpose, 2.7 acres on West Mockingbird at Maple. It's immediately adjacent to the much larger PD 759, which is a very successful mixed-use development. It's got a loft, hotels, it's got several residential phases, it's got retail, it's got restaurants. And we're excited about continuing the positive development in this area. It's right between the medical district, one of our biggest economic drivers, as well as Love Field, which is also very successful these days. So we just want to continue what we're doing there. In order to do that, we needed to make some adjustments to the underlying IR zoning here. And really the only way we could accomplish everything we wanted to accomplish is by coming in for a new plan development district. So that's what we're presenting to you today. The Plan Commission recommended approval. We've made a couple of modifications to our original request as we went through the process with them. Basically, we're adding the general merchandise use to IR. You may or may not know this, but IR does not actually permit any general merchandise over 3,500 square feet, which is basically a convenience store. We want to have a little more flexibility to add some retail, but we've agreed to cap it at 7,000, and that was on the basis of Plan Commission asking us to do that. We're also making some minor modifications to the signage requirements, primarily driven by the fact that there's an existing billboard there, which we do not own and do not have any legal rights to move, but still we have to deal with that. We're adjusting the parking ratio for retail and personal service uses other than restaurant to match the adjacent PD 759. And last thing we're asking to do is establish a 5-foot minimum front yard setback on both Maple and Mockingbird. That's a carryover also from PD 759. The Urban Design Studio asked us to do that the last time we amended that PD because it enables the design opportunity to pull buildings up closer to the street if that's how it happens to develop now or in the future. So, as I say, Plan Commission recommended approval of this. We are simply before you today to make that pitch to you, answer any questions you might have, and respectfully ask for you to approve on the basis of the Plan Commission recommendation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any other speakers in favor? No further speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Narvaez.
Thank you, Mayor Medrano. I move to approve the zoning changes recommended by City Plan Commission.
Second. Second. That was me.
Any discussion? Councilmember Gates.
Thank you. I had a question related to, and Mr. Navarez might be able to answer this. The staff didn't recommend this?
I'll defer
it's
to Mayor
in
Medrano.
My district.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Mayor Pro Tem.
They did not.
And what was the reason?
Anybody want to come up?
I didn't know if maybe things change. Sometimes it changes from when staff makes the initial recommendation.
We usually do what we want.
I'm just that curious.
The staff felt the reason for the request was just to allow an additional sign. We didn't think that was a good reason for a PD. The property was already built, so we weren't getting any concessions as far as more urban, any additional landscaping or any additional open space. So all that we got was an additional sign. The changes to the other side, we could maybe have supported separate from the one track that's already built.
Okay, so it is related to being a PD primarily then? I mean, that
right,
creating
just,
that?
Yeah, we felt it was a PD just for a sign from the one track.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Yeah, I took it to the community and they seemed to be okay with it, so. Other discussion? All those in favor say aye. Any opposed? Motion carries.
Item Z3 is a public hearing and an ordinance granting an amendment to plan development subdistrict number 13440-2-D, office subdistrict, retirement housing and convalescent and nursing homes, hospice care and related institution uses within plan development district number 193, the Oak Lawn Special Purpose District with a D liquor control overlay on the north line of Herschel Avenue east of Throckmorton Street.
Mr. Mayor, we sent 199 notices to property owners within 500 feet of the area of request. We received 10 replies in favor of the request and 35 replies in opposition.
Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to the CPC recommendation? We have a speaker coming forward. You'll be given 3 minutes to speak. Please state your name and address for the record, and you may begin.
Good afternoon. My name's Richard
Microphone.
Taylor. Microphone. Good afternoon. My name's Richard Taylor. I'm a resident at 4219 Prescott Avenue, which is directly to the north of the proposed development. I represent, I guess, a number of the residents in the area in the sense that there's been various communication, particularly to Councilman Blewett. And it's not that we're here to resist or stop development. We're objecting to overdevelopment on this project. It's unfortunate the current parcels are zoned as they are, and the proposal to us is overdevelopment. We feel that the development, and particularly the request to move from an FAR of 4.5 to 1 to 5.5 to 1, which will add approximately three levels to the development, will impact the neighbourhood through impact on the values of properties, increased traffic, and just a general impact on the environment itself. The we feel that there's been very little consideration of residents' concerns. As stated, there's been a number of objections, and there's just been very little consideration in that these are fair and reasonable complaints or objections to the proposal. And we feel that given that, we object to moving from 4.5 to 5.5, as it does represent no interest to the neighbourhood, the environment of Oak Lawn, and the existing zoning and multi-use residential area that exists in that environment. So on behalf of a number of the residents, I register our objection, which I understand Councilman Blewett is a recipient of various emails and communication from those residents, and we're just asking that fair diligence and consideration of our objections to what is a seriously overdevelopment in comparison to existing commercial and residential high-rises in the immediate and adjacent areas there. One area that the developer has failed to come back to us on is the shadow represented by in the winter period, whereby this will cast a major shadow over adjacent residences, some of which will never see sunlight for the majority of the day during the winter period. So we see those residences losing their value and their general well-being as part of a residential complex. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other speakers in opposition? Any speakers in favor? We have a speaker coming forward. You'll be given 3 minutes to speak. Please state your name and address for the record, and you may begin.
Mr. Mayor, Robert Reeves, 900 Jackson Street, Suite 160, Dallas, Texas, representing the applicant for this request. Could the audiovisual guy in the back project my PowerPoint up on the screen? In the meantime, I'm going to go ahead and move forward. He heard me. Okay. Mr. Mayor, it's our objective in this zoning case to provide the best-in-class assisted living facility that will offer the highest quality of senior care for many years to come in a neighborhood that should expect nothing but the best. What are we asking for? Remember that this property is zoned, has a base zoning of 02. Residential uses are allowed by right to have 4.5 to 1 floor area ratio. Residential uses are allowed to go 240 feet in height in 02. We comply with all of the setbacks. We are asking for the ability to build an assisted living facility. In fact, the ordinance restricts this property to an assisted living facility under the broad category of nursing home. It's just a component of that. We're asking for a 20-foot front yard setback, which is allowed by code today. We're asking to increase the floor area ratio from 4.5 to 1 to 5.5 to 1, and one of the remaining speakers will address that a little more fully. We're increasing the parking for assisted living by 50% from what would be required for a nursing home. We ask to approve a development plan. We're requiring and imposing upon ourselves extra landscaping, 25-foot wide landscape strip. We're limiting to 140 dwelling units, 157 feet in height, including mechanical, versus 240 feet allowed today. In fact, assisted living generates probably the most benign amount of traffic that you could possibly have in O2 zoning, which allows office, multifamily, et cetera, et cetera. Our parking is all underground except for 12 surface parking spaces, and we've committed to that. As far as some other features of the development, as I said, our parking, we increase it on purpose. We have the Oak Lawn Committee support. We have the support of the staff. We have the support of the City Plan Commission unanimously. We are asking the City Council to approve the City Plans Commission's recommendation. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Are there any other individuals that would like to speak in favor? We have two speakers. One may come forward. Be given 3 minutes to speak. Please state your name and address for the record.
I'm Brenda Cronenberg, 3321 Cole Avenue, in Dallas, 75204. And I am here to represent the Oak Lawn Committee and just reiterate our support for this project. Thank you.
Next speaker in favor.
Hello, my name is Ryan Karen. I'm with CA Senior Living. Address is 130 East Randolph Street, Chicago, Illinois, 60601. So we are the owner, developer, and operator of Senior Living Communities. We're very excited to come here to Dallas, to the Oak Lawn neighborhood. One of the biggest drivers for us when we come into a new community is really the aspect of allowing the local senior citizens who live in that area to stay in their neighborhood as they age. So for us, it's really about aging in place. So the community members of Oak Lawn who already love their neighborhood, as they age, they can stay in it rather than being shipped somewhere else out of the neighborhood. So for us, that's a big driver. For us, seeking the 5.5 to 4.5 versus the 4.5 FAR, for us is really about providing larger units for our residents, just knowing that our target demographic here in the Oak Lawn area typically have larger single-family homes, larger condos, so we want to entice them to stay in their neighborhood with larger units within our building. Part of what we do as assisted living is we have a lot of amenities within our building, so we'll have a dining room, salon, a movie theater, multiple dining venues, bar, bistro, with the idea being that our residents stay in their community within our building and that they don't need to leave due to frailty just because of their age. So as was mentioned earlier, all of this adds up to really one of the lowest intensity uses for this site. From a parking perspective, most of our residents do not own a car. Employee parking is underground, and traffic is really relatively limited. We worked with Oak Park or the Oak Lawn Association through three separate meetings to organize our site and make sure that the circulation worked for the neighborhood. So we would ask for your approval today. Thank you.
Next speaker in favor. There are no further speakers, Mr. Mayor. There are no further speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Council Member Blewett.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move to approve the zoning change as recommended by City Plan Commission.
There's a motion and a second. Discussion?
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, I would like to reference that I have heard quite a bit of information from different residents that live around this project, and I have taken it very seriously. And I want to reemphasize a couple of things. It was mentioned that this thing is currently zoned O2, which allows for height of 240 feet. It also allows a lot more in terms of traffic and parking. This project is 157 feet, which is 80 feet less than what is allowed. If you look at the number of cars, the traffic, the on-street parking, it is significantly less of an impact than what could be built there. I think this is a net advantage to the area. I think the diversity of this type of project actually adds to the area. So I've heard your concerns, and the biggest response that I can say in terms of the advantage to the neighborhood is what's not being built there. So I do want to make that point that I have listened, I understand it, I've looked at this, and I think it is better for our area, and I hope you all support me.
Councilmember Kleiman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. I do agree with Councilmember Blewett that this is a great improvement over the existing potential uses, including barbershop, beauty shop, massage parlor, and a few other uses. I also feel very strongly that in the city we need to do downzoning. Office to residential is good for the city because we just don't have enough residential units. What I do have concern about, and I don't know if either the applicant or staff can address, is why is there no affordability component in this proposal? And was that discussed at CPC or offered by the applicant?
Typically, retirement housing isn't something that we do mixed income housing with, affordability with, so we couldn't tie it to something like multifamily is what we tie our mixed income housing to. We felt that the increase in the FAR was okay because we were getting all the parking underground, and we thought that was a benefit to the neighborhood. It reduced sort of the bulk of the structure because it's all going underground, so we were fine with the increase of the FAR based
so
on that.
Do maybe the applicant can answer. Do we have any idea on what the anticipated rents will be in this facility?
Thank you. So we do offer market rate rental is what we do. We have multiple price points based on unit types. So we'll have studios, one beds, one bed plus den, two bed, one bath, two bed, two bath for couples. Sometimes, very often, we'll have a couple come in and maybe the...
Yeah, but what kind of price ranges are we talking about? Because this is a pretty, market rate, this is a pretty expensive neighborhood.
Yes, it is. With providing full care as assisted living, it is significantly more than a regular rental property.
Okay.
It is hard. We haven't built the project, obviously, but in this market, it is tying to market rate. So you're looking at starting in that studio to one bed range, $4,000 to $6,000 potentially.
$4,000 to $6,000
for the whole entry point from studio up to a two bed. So there's multiple entries, and then there's also types of care and levels of food, whether you want two meals a day, three meals a day. So it's a wide variety.
And is it a la carte? If you need care, that you pay extra for that. If you need food, you pay extra for that. So just the base rental amount is in the $4,000 to $6,000.
No, that's including everything, including the care, including the food. Yes, you have the potential if you want to opt out, you can when you get
right.
In.
So you are able to actually establish a market price specifically just if you're going to live in the unit.
It typically our assisted living, just because of the frailty of our residents, they all typically need the meals and the care. It really comes as a package.
Yeah, I'm just struggling with, it seems like it would not be that hard to just, break out, and we could work on an affordability for just the residential, just the living component of it, mm-hmm. and then the other items be added on. I appreciate very much that you're interested in having folks age in place or age in the neighborhood where they are. But for a lot of folks in that neighborhood, this would be so far beyond their ability to pay, especially when you're on a fixed income, and especially, the houses that are being displaced, which the net is so many more rooms. That's good. We're getting a lot more than that. And I guess, no reason to kind of hold this up, but I think the message that I'd like to send to kind of my colleagues and to staff and to the CPC is every time a transaction comes in front of us, we don't have to vote on it. So if we want to start holding affordability as a gate to all these types of residential transactions, we need to be thinking in those terms. To be able to get even a handful of commitment of a handful of, how many units will be in this?
Oh, we're allowed up to 140. We're
right.
Still in design.
So 10% would be 14 units. That means people in the neighborhood that don't live on Turtle Creek Boulevard, but do live in the neighborhood, could also afford to live there. We've got to kind of get our head around the fact that the time as a council we have leverage on affordability is right now when we pass these zoning cases. So that's my little soapbox. I it's good for the city to get more units. That also helps our affordable, because the more we get overall, then the more the prices can come down to a reasonable level. But I like people to kind of think in those terms. But I'll be supporting it, Mr. Blue, and I appreciate very much that you are actually downzoning this property from, a 20 to 24-foot office building and getting some residential for Dallas that we really need. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Councilmember West.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I was mainly just going to emphasize the improvement over the O2 zoning. O2 is intense. It allows, we were just kind of going through the code earlier on some of the bizarre things that are allowed in O2 zoning. But the most intense uses that we'd be seeing here would be multifamily, an office, which is economically probably what would be coming here if we weren't getting this retirement facility. And so in terms of, you know, looks like a lot of the objections were traffic and parking issues. And I think it would be, under what zoning by right is allowed there, it would be a lot worse if it was just allowed to just be built by right. So I think this is a win for the community, and it's definitely a win for housing because, yes, we're not getting the affordability component that we desperately need here, but we are getting, I had read 140 new units, but it sounds like it might be 240 units in an area where right now we don't have it. So that's a huge win. And I want to give a shout out to whoever came up with the parking reduction for this. I don't know if that was the applicant or CPC, but it was a creative way to kind of shift what's in PD, the current PD, to make it work for a retirement community where there's some folks that are not going to be driving there. So I like seeing that you guys are thinking creatively, and kudos to CPC on adopting that. One other thing I just want to say for the neighbors that are concerned about the zoning that's underlying, and I say this to my residents too all the time, it's good to analyze your zoning and in your area and make adjustments to it. This neighborhood is very lucky to have the Oaklawn Committee, who's a great resource, especially for zoning. And so I'd take advantage of just doing a full review of the whole area if that's warranted. So thank you.
Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you. And I do want to commend him on his efforts, but I want to also support the statement that Councilmember Kleinman has stated about the muscle that we have around the horseshoe and really the commitment to equity in this city to affordable housing. And I think I've said this before on the record when I first arrived to my members, especially in the southern sector. If we keep going along just to get along and not saying anything about the need for affordable housing in the northern sector of town, other neighborhoods that are not considered in the deep south, then shame on us. Because the crisis that we face, just as we're in a conundrum now with District 8 needing that affordable housing, and then we're going to get pushback from that because of what we got to deal with in terms of the language, the policy. But we have got to get this train moving so that we can have progress in the southern sector. So I appreciate you mentioning that, Mr. Kleinman. We've got to be about the business of bringing quality housing and quality of life to the southern sector. So I'm going to support this particular project today, but I do want to go on the record. We've got to start taking care of business, TCB, around this horseshoe when it comes to pushing that button for equity and affordable housing in these other parts of town who have given us pushback from that particular, this whole notion of we don't want them here, not say that this is going on here, but this is what normally goes on. So, Mayor, thank you for your patience in allowing me to say that, but I did want to support his statement and make sure I'm on the record for my community fighting for affordable housing in the southern sector.
All right. Looks like no further discussion. All those in favor say aye. Any opposed? Motion carries.
Your next item is D4. Councilmember Gates has a conflict of interest on this item and will be leaving the council chamber. Z4 is a public hearing and an ordinance granting a planned development sub-district for GR general retail uses on property on the west corner of Lemon Avenue and Oaklawn Avenue.
Mr. Mayor, we sent 246 notices to property owners within 500 feet of the area of request. We received 66 replies in favor and 40 in opposition.
Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to the CPC recommendation? We have three speakers coming forward. One speaker may come to the podium. You'll be given 3 minutes to speak. Please state your name and address for the record.
Hi, my name is Ewan McDonald. My address is 2728 Reagan Street, apartment 201. First of all, I would like to thank Councilmember Blewett for his response to my email, and I know he's responded to many others as well. We appreciate that you're listening, but nonetheless, myself and several other local residents do oppose this development. Personally speaking, I've got three main reasons for doing so. The first one is the traffic study that was carried out. The staff that put together the case report have done excellent work putting this together, and the main thing they pointed out is that Lemon and Oaklawn is already at capacity during rush hour. in the mornings and in the afternoons, late afternoons, is practically standstill. Even adding what the developer has called a 6% increase, which I find quite dubious, even adding that is going to make it even worse in the future. This neighborhood is already stretched to its limits, and I fear that this is going to just push us above capacity in a way that we can't afford. Now, bear in mind, although the zoning is appropriate, they're asking for all kinds of exemptions here, originally wanting to go above the 120-something-foot limit to 199. I understand that that's now been cut to 170. But nonetheless, that's almost a 100% increase on what's considered appropriate here. The second thing is, okay, we understand that density can bring walkability, but we tend to treat that as a bit of a capturing a unicorn. You can't magic walkability into existence. The developer has talked about such things as improving wheelchair access ramps. While this is welcome, we also need to reckon with the fact that we're going to be sitting at these crosswalks for a long time in all kinds of heat and weather, and also that the street front parking across Oaklawn and Rollins is going to make this increasingly unattractive to pedestrians as time goes on. You only need to look at the development on Cole off Knox, the one with the Trader Joe's. That was supposed to spur walkability in that neighborhood. I go past her every day, and I ain't seeing any of it. And thirdly, I do thank the developer for exercising some restraint here and including some concessions, such as reducing the parking from 6 stories to 5, but nonetheless, it's really not enough when they're getting so much from the city in so many other ways, not just the height of the building, but also like only having 3 feet of landscaping, having so much street front parking. I just feel it's not enough. I feel that this neighborhood is a special one in part because it combines some of the attractions of density and some of the attractions of having, you know, so much walkable commercial activity with the kind of quiet neighborhood feel off those main streets. And the more we overbuild these main streets, the more that's going to spill over to the side streets, and we're going to lose what made the neighborhood special in part in the first place. So I do thank you for your attention. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next speaker in opposition.
Good afternoon, Mayor Pro Tem, Council. My name is Scott Nelson, and my wife and I live at 4034 Rollins, apartment 201, and we've been residents for 5 years. We've owned the property, and I'm speaking in objection for several reasons, one of which is the traffic plan. I think, as the staff indicated, the plan submitted only talks about 3 of the 6 possible aspects, and that it's already a busy neighborhood. Specifically, Lemon Avenue is already a very congested road during rush hour in the mornings and in the evenings, sometimes dangerous to turn left. Rollins and Oak Lawn is also that way. I think it underestimates the impact that this will have on traffic. My next is the fact that there are buildings in downtown, like the Trammell Crow Center or the Belo Mansion or numerous other buildings that have significant underground parking. 5 stories of above ground parking in a neighborhood where the vast majority of the buildings aren't even 4 stories means that it's an eyesore. And it could be done underground in a way that affects less, which would mean that the building's height could be lower, maybe like 140 feet or something along those lines. I also think that any consideration of affordability bonuses, even the CPC's plans, should be mitigated by the fact that that particular neighborhood has some very reasonably priced housing for middle class and other families and single individuals right along Rollins. And I think the increase in taxes, the increase in traffic, and the other things make that less desirable so that you trade off a couple of properties or a couple of units that are more cheaply priced in exchange for a number of other ones that are not so. And I also last want to comment on Eatsies, that I think Eatsies is an asset to the neighborhood, and the development plan is basically tailored to have a hearing in 2 years or 3 years or whenever this is built to, we need to demolish EC's and replace it with another building instead of that. And I lastly want to appreciate Councilman Blewett's comments and receiving emails and our correspondence and previous response to me. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker in opposition.
Good afternoon. I'm Carl Weinkoff. I live at 3816 Bowser Avenue, which is about a block and a half away of this proposed building. The traffic, again, has been pointed out. We are at capacity now. Anybody who's tried to drive on Oaklawn Avenue during rush hour knows that full well. Then you add in what will be construction. That will, again, reduce the lanes of traffic while this is going on. So traffic will be a nightmare. And then, of course, by Streetlight's own study, which I believe caused the Zoning Commission to originally reject this planned building, you'll be over capacity. So that in and of itself is horrific. Now, I constantly hear the drumbeat of, oh, well, this is much better than what could go there. Well, that's all speculation. I mean, massage parlors, really? You think they're going to go in that neighborhood? And also, the businesses are only going to survive if there is adequate parking. So if someone wants to throw up a massage parlor where that is now, those businesses aren't going to thrive, and they're not going to stay in business because there's no parking. There isn't the ability for people to come and to patronize those businesses. So all of the stuff about, gee, this is so much better than what could be there, is a bit of a canard. And I don't think scare tactic, speculation about how bad it could be. So we're supposed to accept something in this neighborhood that isn't good because we don't want something that is even worse. And that kind of argument seems to be flawed from its very inception. And so I would ask that the council please vote against allowing this building to be built, because it will not benefit the neighborhood or the residents of this city. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker in opposition.
Hi, my name is Eric Newcomb. I live at the corner of Reagan and Bowser at 3900 Bowser. I've lived there for 25 years. And like my neighbors, it's the traffic. It's for the developers to send us a postcard saying it will actually decrease traffic, thinking that a gas station is the destination as opposed to EC's in a high-rise apartment. That was just ludicrous. Right now, traffic will back up from Lemon to Wycliffe every morning. People cut through my neighborhood to avoid the light. From 35 to Lemon on Oak Lawn, backs up every day. It's the scope of the – I'm all for urban renewal. There's been a lot in the neighborhood since I've been there. But the scope of this project is just too large. And my neighbors have all said it all, so thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other individuals in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to the CPC recommendation? We have a speaker coming forward. One speaker coming forward.
Good afternoon, council members. My name is Alyssa Dahl. I live at 3230 Throckmorton Street in Dallas. This Streetlights residential project has undergone a lot of amendments since its presentation at Oaklawn Committee, its vote at CPC, and in the weeks leading up to this City Council meeting today. At this point, I don't think it's even clear what the neighborhood would be getting if this project were to be approved. There have been no updated renderings of different perspectives of the building. And additionally, I think that the traffic flow through and around the property has not been well thought out. Using the alleyway between the EC lot and the proposed upzone streetlight residential lot as an ingress and egress from the property, I think is a bad idea. There's barely enough room for one small car, let alone two cars going in opposing directions or a moving truck. For these reasons, I think that this project should be reconsidered at the CPC level and possibly even by Oak Lawn Committee. Thank you so much for your time.
If you want to speak in opposition to the CPC recommendation, please come forward and have a seat on this first row in the center section. Sir, you may begin.
My name is Mark Givens. I live at 3220 Reagan, Dallas, Texas, 75219. This building is a nightmare. To try to take, you know, from one building and take this, make downzone one and make another one is not right. I would like for all of you guys to put down your phones and listen to me, because it doesn't seem like anybody does this in this meeting. We are against this. It's just not right for our neighborhood. And you wouldn't want it in your neighborhood.
Next speaker in opposition.
Good afternoon. My name is Jeff McLaughlin, 3818 Holland Avenue, unit number 308, Dallas, Texas. I'm here today to ask each of you to vote in opposition to this. As we have gone through this process, this has been sold as a save ETs, this is great for the neighborhood. And oh, by the way, we want to put a 240-foot building at this intersection. It's different today. It is much different than what we started with. Hopefully that we're not having the borrowing option as part of this new proposal. In the same neighborhood that Councilman Kleinman was talking about applauding downzoning, this is upzoning. It's taken a 120-foot zoning process and taken it up to 170 feet. It is something that should be sent back to CPC, hopefully back to the Oak Lawn Committee for reconsideration as a standalone project, to have this argued as what do you get from 120 feet up versus what's the developer giving, from 240 feet down. So, again, I'm here today to ask you to vote in opposition. Thank you.
Next speaker in opposition.
Good afternoon. My name is Bill Kreitzer. I live at 6211 West Northwest Highway, Dallas, Texas. I consider that today will be one of the most important decisions that will be made by the mayor and the Dallas City Council regarding the redevelopment plan for the zoning request before us today. I am unique in that I come from a community in which zoning was passed on September 11, 2019, that completely ignored 80% of the residents in opposition to upzoning the plan from the CPC. I am very concerned from personal experience that the Dallas City Council will once again allow the upzoning of this project up to 240 feet. I have followed this zoning case and believe Councilmember Blewett's expertise in zoning engineering will allow a reasonable outcome to allow building up to 120 feet. One of the major differences between our zoning case and the one before you today is that the city staff recommendation of this overzealous development is denial with good reason. Before any motion is made to approve the CPC document, I truly believe that it is in the best interest of the City Council to make a motion to send this zoning case back to the CPC, as the current document is riddled with inconsistencies and especially the lack of use of the Ford Dallas Comprehensive Plan. I would like to ask each and every one of you to stop this process of irresponsible, irrational redevelopment and not set an incorrect precedent for the city of Dallas, but instead advocate for responsible development for the Oak Lawn community. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next speaker in opposition.
My name is John Olson, and I live at 4038 Holland. I'm just outside of the notification circle. And I hope everyone here has read the city's recommendation for denial and asked them further questions why they recommended such a way. I think the main issue that really I haven't heard yet is the use of a transfer of development rights from where the ETC's building is to the subject property on the corner. This does not follow the Oaklawn plan for a more urban neighborhood. I think the majority of people in my neighborhood would support two 12-story by right buildings on the properties than one 18 to 20-story. This case is a District 14 case, but if approved, will open a can of worms for everyone on this council and at the city, because more developers will want the same transfer of rights. I own several parcels of MF2 property. If I wanted to come in and say I was going to leave one story on my, you know, right now I could build 36 feet. If I wanted to say I wanted to transfer some rights from my one property to my other property right next door, I wouldn't even get past the door. I'd be laughed out of the, you know, and I think developers and development should be treated the same way. So I hope you oppose it. Thank you.
Next speaker in opposition.
Good afternoon. My name is David Hairston. I live at 3215 Carlisle Street in Dallas, Texas. We're opposed to this project that's presented to the Planning and Zoning Commission last year. And the following is the reasoning. The height exceeds what we believe is appropriate for the neighborhood. Ingress and egress for this property is going to be an absolute nightmare. If you ever go in there right now around 8 o'clock to ETC's, you'll see where people are using the alleyway to get in. It's crazy. The communication to the local property owners, at the very least, has been manipulated with a lot of false data. We believe that another building and another site at that site will eventually be built. That this is a pure farce of downzoning and upzoning, and we're going to see a lot of activity in this building if you agree to this to go through. So we believe that this project should go back to the Planning and Zoning Commission, and that is what I believe. David Hairston, thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker in opposition.
My name is Patricia Perez, and I live at 4034 Holland Avenue. I also own a duplex at 4032 and a unit at Tall Trees Condominiums, which is across the street from this development. This is a very controversial case because the developer is asking to transfer the height from one building to the other one. I feel that this would set a precedent for the rest of the neighborhood that everyone or many people will want to do this in the future. The close neighbors are not, they don't want this. They prefer the two 11-story buildings. You're aware that staff recommended not to approve it, and then the commissioner at the time approved it. We will never understand why he did that. I mean, we still ask that question. We've had a town meetings hall with Councilman Blewett, and there were a lot of neighbors that day, about 150 in opposition, and they've sent many letters. I'm aware of many letters that have come to you in opposition. Why do they need the height? If Verizon, AT&T, Panera, Starbucks, Total Wine, it works for them. Why does it not work for them to have an 11-story building? It's the economics, and that doesn't help us, the neighbors that work there, live there, have friends there. I suggest also that this case goes back to CPC, and we can see the changes that have been done, because many changes have been done to date. We haven't seen the renderings. We haven't, we're not sure about the parking enclosure, everything like that. If this project is not approved, there are other projects in the people, developers in the world that want to do that. This is a prime real estate. Other people will come. We don't need to rush it today. If this is approved today, it will affect the rest of our lives for a long time, forever. Just imagine if this was next to you. You wouldn't like it either. So think about this. Please do not approve it. It's not advantageous to us. It will affect the quality of our lives. In Mr. Blewitt's campaign, he said, we cannot allow changes that adverse the quality of life and the historic nature of our neighborhoods. Please remember this. Thank you.
Next speaker in opposition.
Good afternoon. My name is Sandra Morales. I reside at 4410 Vandelia, Dallas, 75219. I've been a homeowner since 1974. I attended Sam Houston Elementary School, T.J. Rusk, North Dallas High School, all in Oak Lawn. Oak Lawn and Lemon Avenue, it's like the epicenter of Oak Lawn. And this particular project will just change the dynamics of Oak Lawn. Not for the good, unfortunately. And I know that change is inevitable, but change can be good and change can be bad. This is not a good change. My compatriots have asked for it to go back to perhaps the Plan Commission. I'm asking you to vote against it completely because it is not in line with the Oak Lawn Plan, which has been in effect since about 1982 to protect the neighborhoods, to conserve and preserve the neighborhoods. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Next speaker in opposition.
Hi, Adam Murphy, 3435 Dickinson. I agree with what a lot of the other speakers have said, we spoke in opposition for this project. We don't feel as though it's the right project for that area. But I want to talk about a couple other things instead. So we have about five or six projects that are currently being developed in Oak Lawn right now that are either about to be built or are being built, like Toll Brothers, this project, the nursing home that was just approved. Then you add on Rivershawn in the works. We need some serious look at traffic and infrastructure in Oak Lawn. I mean, I know that this is where you guys want density, or this is where one of the areas of the city that people want density, but we really do need a serious look at infrastructure when we add on all the things that have been built, are proposed, and are under construction, because there is a serious need for a bigger plan than just this project. I also want to say that I want to thank all the neighbors here that have been supported or have been working on this. I mean, there's people that have been meeting every Saturday to fight this project and to do everything they could to, to change the project. We all want the project. We all want that site to be redeveloped. We just don't feel that this is the right project for it. So thank you to the neighborhood groups and also other neighborhood groups throughout the city. And then lastly, I just wanted to say thank you to Councilman Blewitt. He's been very responsive to me in really talking with him and negotiating and pushing back on the developer. So I just wanted to say thank you for that, because I know that you were kind of dealt a bad hand here with this, and you came in halfway through, you really did get some changes, so I appreciate it. So we really hope you can send it back to CPC, but thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker in opposition. I believe that concludes your opposition. Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in favor of the CPC recommendation? We have a speaker coming forward. We have several. If you wish to speak in favor, will you please come forward and have a seat on this front row, this center section? You may begin. Please state your name and address.
Your audio video guy have a little plug extension for USB?
We can go ahead and start with someone else while you're waiting to get that set up.
Good afternoon. My name is Cameron Burke, 3416 Oak Lawn. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in favor of this project. I'm here representing my family and our extensive investment in Oak Lawn. We own the property immediately across Oak Lawn from this site, a property across Lumen Avenue and on Cedar Springs. We're protective of this neighborhood and want to see high quality and context sensitive redevelopment, which is why we are thrilled to see Streetlight's proposal unanimously supported at City Plan Commission. What Streetlights is proposing will be a massive improvement of arguably one of the most underutilized infill corners in the city of Dallas. We appreciate Streetlight's thoughtful approach of placing a taller building closer to the intersection where it belongs while keeping Eatsies. Introducing a residential use here is also a benefit to the neighborhood. The height request is consistent with other taller buildings nearby, and the FAR request is reasonable. We welcome this development to the neighborhood and are confident that approval of this plan will guarantee a bright future for Oak Lawn. Thank you.
Next speaker in favor.
Hi, I'm Brenda Cronenberg. I live at 3321 Cole Avenue, and I'm here representing the Oak Lawn Committee. We voted to support this project and feel like it is complying with the intent of the Oak Lawn plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker in favor.
Good afternoon. My name is Dawn Mickey, 2525 Turtle Creek, Dallas 75201. As a resident and owner of many residential properties in the Oak Lawn area, I'm here today to strongly express my support for the Eatsies and Streetlights development. This zoning case is an example of the exact kind of development our neighborhood needs. We need more residential living opportunities in our city and in this neighborhood specifically. The design of the building is beautiful. This development creates a pedestrian promenade that promotes a walkable urban neighborhood. The city of Dallas will get a $5 million benefit from this project, making this the easiest win our neighborhood will ever see. We basically get $1 million for each extra floor of height we are granting the developer. Please vote yes on this zoning case. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next speaker in favor.
Hi, my name is Jack Parker, and I live at 2525 Turtle Creek Boulevard, 75219. I've spoken to many of my neighbors, and they are excited and welcome this new development to our neighborhood. We love Eatsies, and we're very happy that Streetlights is protecting Eatsies. We need more housing, and this gets us residential units and affordable housing. We must grow our tax base and create places for our residents to live. The project accomplishes both. The city doesn't have money to upgrade our infrastructure, but if you approve this project, the developer pays for new sewer lines and buried power lines. We need more money for street repairs and police officers. The extra property taxes generated by this project would allow for 20 new police officers on the street. Plus, we get a great development in our neighborhood. Why would anyone say no to this project? Please vote yes today. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker in favor.
Good afternoon. My name is Steve Norrell. I live at 3515 Brown Street, which is outside the notification area, but still within this neighborhood. This is a intersection that I go through every day, so I'm very familiar with this area and also understand some of the concerns of those who oppose. That said, I own about 20 properties within this area. I sit on four HOA boards, and so I'm very involved in my community, very involved with my neighbors and other property owners in the area. And in my discussions with them, they're all in favor of this development in particular, but overall the development that we've seen in our area and throughout Dallas. I understand there are some issues with traffic and so forth, but as we know, that exists everywhere in Dallas now, and it's just part of the growing pains that come along with new development. I think this project, though, is going to serve our community and this neighborhood very well, and I would strongly support this and encourage the council to vote for this. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next speaker in favor.
Hi, good afternoon. Suzanne Kedron, 2323 Ross Avenue. You've heard from several supporters in the neighborhood. One thing I want you to clue in on is the of the people in the notification area, there were 66 people in support, which represents a percentage of 62%. We have over 200 letters that are also in support. We think this is a great project for the city of Dallas. We get increased tax base, we get improved infrastructure, and we're transforming a corner of Oak Lawn that really needs it. Your city plan commission voted on this project unanimously, which means that each and every one of your commissioners voted in favor of this project. Even since then, we have continued to work very diligently with the council member from the district and with each of the other stakeholders in the district. And also the Oak Lawn Committee, I just wanted to remind you that they, too, supported the project. With that, we are seeking your support as well, and we're here to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker in favor.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor, council members. My name is Greg Coutant. I'm with Streetlights Residential, 2300 Northfield Street, Dallas, Texas. Our project's located at the corner of Lemon and Oak Lawn, where an existing gas station, Pizza Hut, and surface parking lot are located today. We're proposing a mixed-use development that will save a very important neighborhood-serving business that is the heart of the neighborhood. Our oversized sidewalks and setbacks create the pedestrian promenade that this neighborhood deserves. Across the street, there's an office building at over 240 feet in height. Beyond that, you see the condo buildings that also are 240 feet and taller. Without a zoning change, two 120-foot-tall buildings could be built on the site, and those uses could generate larger traffic than the residential building we are proposing. In fact, our traffic study shows that the level of service at the major intersections nearby remain unchanged even after this project. This corner should be treated with prominence. We've designed a building that has a nod to the past architecture and creates an urban experience this neighborhood calls for. Our project received support from the Oak Lawn Committee in August, as well as unanimous support from the City Plan Commission. Even with that unanimous support, we've continued to work with Councilmember Blewett to make even more concessions, including reducing the maximum height allowed to 175 feet, reducing the height of the podium from 75 feet to 58 feet. We've increased the front yard setback on Lemon Avenue from 10 feet to 15 feet. And in addition to that, on Lemon Avenue, have incorporated a 5-foot right-of-way dedication to the City of Dallas. We've also committed to additional screening on the building on the southern and western facades. This project checks all the boxes. It's residential, provides over $5 million in benefits to the city through affordable housing, through burying the power lines, improving the water and sewer infrastructure around the site, and increasing the property tax base. I ask that you support this project. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next speaker in favor. There are no further speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Right. Councilmember Blewett.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move to approve the zoning change as recommended by City Plan Commission with the following changes. For the first 58 feet of structure height along Lemon Avenue, the minimum front yard is 15 feet. For any portion of the structure above 58 feet in height along Lemon Avenue, the minimum front yard is shown on the development plan. When the provisions of sections S-151.105B, S-151.108B, S-151.111A, S-151.113, and S-151.114 are met, the maximum floor area ratio is 3.9 to 1, and the property is considered one lot for purposes of floor area ratio. When the provisions of sections S-151.105B, S-151.108B, S-151.111A, S-151.113 and S-151.114 are met, the maximum structure height is 175 feet. Projections may project a maximum of 10 feet above the maximum structure height. Number six is delete the requirement that an access easement be provided for ingress to and egress from the property north of the alley. And delete the requirement that utilities be placed within the required sidewalk planting zone or clear zone.
Council Member Navarez. Oh, do we have a second?
Second.
All right, Council Member Navarez. Oh, you want to go again?
Oh, he
didn't
say
he
just read
the
amendment. You
want to
go
left?
Okay.
Yeah, I'll go left. You want to go left? Thank you, Mayor Medrano. When this case first came around, I was completely and very adamantly opposed to this item. I wasn't happy with the height. I wasn't happy with a lot of different things that were inside of it. At the beginning of this, it was 24 stories. Now I'm hearing it's 17, which I think is a huge reduction. I know it's five more than what was allowed by right in this area. But then there's the trade-off, 5% affordable housing. And you just heard our colleague, Mr. Kleiman, talk about the desperate need for affordability, affordable housing, especially in this area. And so that gave me something to think about. Adding $5 million to our tax rolls on this one property, that's money we desperately need as a city, and we're going to desperately need, as we all know, a recession is coming. We don't know how hard it's going to be, but we're going to need these dollars going forward. And this 5% affordable housing comes with no city incentives whatsoever. Normally, we have to pay in order to get a developer to give us any type of affordability. So to get this 5% without any incentive from the city, meaning not a single taxpayer dollar going into it, I appreciate that, and I thank you all for adding that in. These units are a little bit bigger than normal that you would normally see, so that also makes me happy to see that actual working families will have an opportunity to live inside of one of the best neighborhoods in all of the city of Dallas and still be able to afford it. The overwhelming support of the ballots, 62%, that's a pretty overwhelming majority of folks that are interested in this. CPC unanimously voted in favor of it. Trust me, I've been trying to find every way to not support this item, but with CPC supporting this, I don't see how sending it back to CPC, what they're going to change. They've already approved something even more different. The amendments that Mr. Blewitt's added in, I think, give a little bit more to it. Overall, I think that we've got a much better plan than what was originally brought to us, so I appreciate that. One ask that I will have is, and we have him sitting at the horseshoe, which is great, is our assistant city manager, Majid. You hear the community talking about the traffic at this intersection. I know for a matter of fact, because I used to work at the 3500 Oaklawn building, catty corner from this site for 7 years until I got onto this council. We need something to be done there. So in the next bond, if we can make sure that if you need funds there, what do we need in order to look at this? If you could please take a look at that. We've got time. This won't be built for 2-3 years before it goes up. So we do have time to study and make sure that we get the right changes at this intersection. I agree with the community when it comes to that we need something there. I have walked and traversed that parking lot more times than I care to remember, walking for lunch when I left the 3500 Oaklawn building, walking to Eatsy's, walking to Taco Cabana, walking to the Panera Bread that's on the corner. I eat. So it's like, you know, I know where all the restaurants are in that area, the Thai restaurant down at the other corner, and I did a lot of walking. So I know this neighborhood is walkable, this intersection, this area is walkable, but this can make it even better by having that 15-foot setback. Is something that I now sit there and wish that I would have had that during those 7 years to have been able to traverse back and forth. This intersection is a tough intersection. Those 7 years, I sat in traffic. I've crisscrossed it. I fought it in different ways. But I think that, you know, having something like this is a way that we can make it better. And I think that I have full faith that our staff can come up with some really solid plans. And just something else that you all know, I'm the only council member that lives in a building, and so I know what it's like to live inside of a big building, and I can tell you that through experience is that the traffic doesn't really increase. I live on West Commerce Street, and we now have 1, 2, 3, 4 open complexes, and I've got 2 more that are being built right now, and the traffic hasn't really increased because most apartment dwellers or people who live in big buildings, once they're home, they don't leave. They don't run around. They actually stay more home than they are driving back and forth. And because you typically live, a lot of folks who live in apartments, you just don't have as many visitors either because you tend to live in a smaller unit. So it's not as easy for folks to come and visit. And the parking, you don't want them to come and not have a place to park. And I'm just telling you from my experience and letting you all know that I typically meet people at bars and restaurants and at the gym or wherever we're going to go to hang out. And I look forward to seeing that empty parking lot become something. And looking at these pictures, it looks like this is a really big win for the city of Dallas, especially when it comes to the units that we need in housing and the affordability. I'll be in support. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Atkins.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Vice Chair Blewett. I believe that you probably have a struggle with this decision. I think it's the best decision for the city of Dallas. I look at this project as economic development. We are trying to increase our property tax. We need property tax in order to make sure we have quality of life and better service. But I also look at the affordable housing. And I thank you, the applicant for affordable housing. For many, many years, we did not have affordable houses downtown. I think we get 9 or 10 affordable houses, and we definitely need affordable housing north of 30. And with that, with affordable housing, bring economic development, bring quality of life. There are many applicants, many people who work, who spend almost 30% of their money on transportation to get to work. Maybe they can live there and work there and enjoy life and get an upscaling income, training to get stuff done there. Because, number one, if we don't have affordable houses throughout the city, especially North Dallas, who's going to do the work? How can you make it paying 30% of your income on transportation to get to downtown and get to part of the job where the job's at? You are poverty poor, and that's a shame that we have to deal with poverty poor because of affordable housing. Some part of the city of Dallas, we don't have affordable housing. We can't build affordable housing. This is one city, north and south. We're going to be together as one city. Sometimes we want to sweep affordable housing under the rug. We're not going to do it. We want affordable housing everywhere. And I know some residents don't like affordable housing in their district, but I think that we got to make a difference. We got to make the difference of quality of life where people live. We're going to build a great city. We got to look for all people because everybody pay taxes. It's not because some people pay 65% of the tax in one neighborhood, one pay 15% of the taxes. No, we all pay the taxes. It's out of the quality of life. And we are right in the horseshoe. We got to make sure everyone have a place to live. Traffic, I think Magic, I think with TC, that we look at the traffic, we look at infrastructure. I got infrastructure in my district that 2 cars can't go down to the same street because the street's not wide enough. I need that. I got sewage problem in my district. People still don't separate in the city of Dallas. I got bar ditches that water don't drain in part of the city. I wish I had all this condensed and all the traffic in District 8 and part of the city that I live in. I wish we could have the market rate. When we build apartments in my district, we got to go to the suburb to get market rate for apartments, to get it done, to get comp. So let's work together to be one city. I see you shaking your head. I understand. But I don't live there. But we are in the state of Dallas. We are one city. And long on here, we're going to work for one city, and we're going to do the best we can for everyone in the state of Dallas to have a better quality of life. Thank you. And I will be supporting you, Mr. Blewett.
Councilmember Basildua.
Thank you, Mayor. I will also be supporting this. I think that there were a lot of concerns that I had as well, and I just want to thank my colleague, Mr. Blewett, for being open to hearing some feedback from not only colleagues but the community. I think that one of the things that the public fails to realize is that a lot of these decisions that we make are hard, and I say hard because you can feel that you're making the right one, and no matter which way it is, there's going to be people that don't like it, and it's unfortunate, but that's a part of the job that we're here to do. And so with that, I know that it wasn't an easy decision. I know that you care greatly for both sides of who's reached out to you in your community, and we have to be able to cipher through that. And when I see the overwhelming response that came back in favor versus what we have, I have some still reservations when it comes to the traffic, and I think that Magid's going to rise to that challenge. I'd say that I'm more concerned with 5,000 baseball fans being let out than I am of the traffic impact of this building. But that was just my little dig. I had to get in there. So I will be supporting this. I think that 9 affordable units is 9 more than what we would have if it's built by right. I think that especially representing a district in the southern sector, I know the struggle that we have in this city in getting developers even interested in providing affordability in other parts of our city. The precedent that's really being set here today is saying that regardless of if you are getting incentives from us, we have an expectation in this city, and we're going to address the affordability problem that we have in this city. And I think that Mr. Kleinman was absolutely correct in saying that we need to be aggressive to set those precedents. So I will be supporting this. I think that this was not an easy case, but with the setbacks, with the below-grade parking, with the affordability, this is ultimately the best case for the city of Dallas. Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem McGee.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I won't repeat everything my colleagues have said. I just say that I know this was a tough decision. I know it was a lot of work because I think along with my colleagues, we were getting the late night calls, and know that you're putting the effort in to try to figure out the best result. And it's tough. I know that you've worked this as good as you possibly can, and for that reason, I'll be supporting you and offer my thanks to Mr. Blewett.
Councilmember West.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. There are some cases that are easy, and there are some cases that no matter what you do, folks are going to be upset. And this is one of those cases. And it's they're the most difficult, the hardest cases we do. And of anything we do up here, these types of zoning cases are the most difficult because no matter what you do, there's never a perfect solution. And I think the best result is to find a happy medium that gets it done with the least damage possible. And I think David's done this, or Councilman Blewett's done this. He's worked hard. I know he's stayed up nights and weekends listening to neighbors, going to community meetings, and just struggling to get to a place that he could live with. I think it's incredible that we started with a height of 199 and it made it through the Oaklawn Committee and CPC with unanimous support, and he's negotiated and got that down from 199 to 175 and still have the affordability element and still have the all the other amenities that we're getting with this. I would argue that if there was going to be a 120-story office tower here, you would see a lot more in commuter traffic and impact on the streets and in the neighborhoods than you would see by having residential here. So for me, it's not just a win for the city, and it is a win for the city because we're getting affordable housing, which is awesome, and we're also getting market rate housing, which we need just as badly. But it's a win for the neighborhood in the sense that I think a 120-foot office tower with medical uses in it, and then one right next door to it at the ETS location would be a much more intensive footprint that the neighborhood would have. So I want to commend him for his work on that. And also on the walkability aspect. I mean, I think it's a little naive to think Lemon Avenue is going to be walkable just yet, just with this project, but you've got to start somewhere. I've constantly had developers ask me, why are you asking for one more foot of sidewalk here when the sidewalk's only 4 feet? Well, it's because you got to start somewhere. And why not start on the corner of Lemon and Oaklawn for pushing walkability down Lemon? So I will enthusiastically support the motion.
Councilmember Mendelson.
I just want to also commend you, Councilmember Blewett. I think you have handled this in an exemplary manner, reaching out to your community, navigating with staff, and come up with a really good project. I'm impressed, and I just want to say for the people who have said you wouldn't want this in your district, you're wrong. I have actually begged to have something like this in my district, and I'll take three. So thank you for really even showing us how to do this for well. So I'm impressed.
Councilmember Blackman.
So I too don't want to, but I'm going to echo everybody, Councilman Blewett. And I think for the last 2 weeks, you and I have been talking, and it was like West Texas weather. It changed every day. But I think you listened to everyone, and you took in everybody's wants and needs, and you did a very good job. And you also incorporated what you would like, as Councilman West said, what it needs to be in the years to come, and start that conversation and that moving forward. And I will echo the intersection. It is not the easiest one to get through, so any magic you could work is much appreciated. So I, too, will be supporting this, and thank you for your leadership on this, Councilman Blewett.
Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you so very much. And I want to add, once again, I'm going to continue to, on my previous round with Mr. Kleiman, to continue to underscore that particular piece. But it is difficult, and I will speak only now because I know that it is tough when you're a first time, you're a freshman at the horseshoe, and you have these major decisions, and you have handled it well, Mr. Blewett, and that it's all about sleepless nights and nightmares, too, because you really know either way you go, somebody's not going to be happy. But I do hang around in that area, and I'm one of those eatsyholics, and you know, I know what you're talking about. The young man who spoke about traffic, I'm with you on that. We do need to make a commitment to take care of the business there. But I will support the council member on this particular project as long as you make sure ETH is intact. So, but on a serious note, I do support the community in wanting to have that input from the city on taking care of the environment. And so it is something that is a tough decision for me, but ETH has kind of pulled me on over, but thank you for your hard work. And those who are here, please know that he is dedicated and he is committed to making sure that he serves his community. And he also, I'm going to put this out here too, part of our economic development policy. He is Mr. Tennille Atkins, chair of the Economic Development Committee, has assigned Mr. Blewett to me as a partner as we pursue economic equity in the southern sector. So I don't think I could have gotten a better partner to work with me, and perhaps we too can get a similar project. So thank you, Mr. Blewett, and thank you, Mr. Atkins. Thank you, Mayor.
Councilmember Blewett.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I appreciate the sentiment around the horseshoe today. I really do. I appreciate the support. I appreciate the understanding that this is a very, very difficult decision. I will go back to my election in June. And the first time that I went to the Oaklawn Committee as a councilman, this issue, I wasn't invited to speak, but I popped in after another event, and I wanted to see the machinations of the Oaklawn Committee, and this issue was being debated, and it was challenging there. The following month, I came back and actually gave a formal presentation, and they voted, and it was a challenging vote, a lot of passion on both sides, but it did pass. The first time, we're all talking about 199 feet, but the first time I saw this project, it was 240 feet. They came back in, I believe it was July, and it had been reduced to 199, and that's the height that was approved, and that's the height that went to the City Plan Commission. And so by the time it got to me, it was 199 feet. I did run on the idea of being a neighborhood guy. I ran on the idea that existing neighbors have rights. And I also ran on the idea that change is coming. Dallas is popular, And in District 14, we have a lot of neighborhoods that are very popular. So the challenge is going to be how to manage that change. $199 was too much for me. I felt like it was too dense, too big. It was too much of an impact on that area. But I wanted residential there. It was very important to have that. It's important to have affordable, Mr. Atkins, as you mentioned. I mean, a lot of you guys work very hard on affordable housing issues. They did bring that into this project. It is something that we send a powerful message to other developers that we want in this city. Bringing the height down to 175 is not my ideal, but it's significantly better, and it was a place that I got to that I thought it was something that would be worth the trade-off for what the city got and also what I think the neighborhood gets. I looked at this very closely from what the neighborhood gets, and I looked at the Oaklawn plan to think about what does this do for the future, because it's not just one project. This is going to be other projects, other encroachment. That area is very desirable. This is going to be an ongoing struggle, and I will tell you that this precedent is not something that I am looking at by itself. I am looking at the entire area and what it's going to look like, what I think we want it to be. The Oaklawn plan, which I believe went into effect in 1985, has a lot of zoning issues in it that cause problems for us today. So here we are. We're going 55 feet over what it calls for, and the trade-off is significant revenue for the city, affordable housing. But one of the things that I really am excited about, if I can think about the future, it's, yeah, we pulled it back 25 feet off of Oak Lawn, but they pulled it, it's 20 feet now off of Lemon. But the first time I saw it, it was 10 feet off of Lemon was the setback, which would never have promoted the idea of walkability along Lemon. So now, together with the right-of-way, we have 20 feet as a setback. You'll have wider sidewalks. You'll have the ability. We'll send the message to future development along Lemon that we'd like it to have more of a boulevard feel, more trees, wider sidewalks. I like the idea of Lemon being improved in that way. I like the idea of those neighborhoods that are bracketed by those bigger streets having better developments on those bigger streets. But I will say again, I have heard all of you. I had a community meeting that I didn't have to have, but I wanted to have it, even though it had been through CPC. I didn't feel like I'd heard enough from everybody. I wanted to make sure that people who didn't email me, people who weren't at the Oak Lawn Committee, people who lived in the area, had a legitimate opportunity to hear their voices and their concerns, and I heard it. The developer would tell you it wasn't that long ago that I got to a number with this that I couldn't get there. And I said, that's it. It's not enough. They came back with another concession on height that made it more palatable. And I thought net, it's better for the neighborhood to have this development. I'll be watching future developments. This is a master, I will look at that area from a broad perspective. So if I sound conflicted, it's because this was not easy. This is not 100% decision, but net, it's good for the city. Net, it's good for the neighborhood. And I am counting on you to build a very good development for the area. I hope you'll support me on this motion.
All right. All those in favor say aye. Any opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you. Councilmember Gates, you may return to the council chamber. We'll now move to agenda item C5. C5 is a public hearing regarding an application for a specific use permit for the sale of alcoholic beverages in conjunction with a general merchandise or food store 3,500 square feet or less use on property on the south side of Samuel Boulevard east of Jim Miller Road.
Mr. Mayor, we sent 9 notices to property owners within 200 feet of the area of request. We received no replies in favor and none in opposition. Due to denial at the City Plan Commission, this will require a 3/4 vote to approve.
As stated, CPC has recommended denial. Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to the denial? We have a speaker coming forward. This is in opposition to the denial. Please state your name and address for the record. You'll be given 3 minutes to speak.
Good afternoon. My name is Ryan Hughes, 1111 South Main Street, Grapevine, Texas. I represent the applicant. We're asking you to approve the specific use permit to sell alcohol in conjunction with a general merchandise store and a D1 overlay. Since the Planning Commission meeting in October, we've earned the support of the Neighborhood Association, have done what they've asked to clean up and fix up the store, and the business owner is committed to attending Neighborhood Association meetings in the future to alleviate any future concerns the neighborhood has. And we're asking you to vote with the staff's recommendation for approval. And with that, I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any other individuals in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to the denial? Any speakers in favor of the denial? No further speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Basildua.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move to deny the zoning request with prejudice. I met with the applicant in October, and we gave good indication of what we were looking for. One thing that I know has to happen in District 7 and other districts is we've got to get more aggressive, and we've got to get more less lenient. There's still illegal activity going on in the store. There is, and I can verify that by my own purchase. And I'm telling you this because I put my undercover hat on whenever I get these cases, and I think that that's the best way to go in and do it. But I am not supporting this. I hope that y'all will support this. I did check. I know that I said with prejudice. I have, you know, verified with staff that this is. I know zoning stays with the land, but we have process in place for that to be waived with circumstances that have changed and or a new applicant. So in the spirit of making sure that we are doing what's right for the surrounding community, I'd like to deny this. Thank you, colleagues.
Any other discussion then? All those in favor of the denial, say aye. Any opposed? Motion carries.
Item Z6 is a public hearing and an ordinance granting an MU-2 mixed-use district on property on the northeast quarter of Greenville Avenue and Pineland Drive, south of Walnut Hill Lane.
Mr. Mayor, we sent 11 notices to property owners within 500 feet of the area of request. We received 2 replies in favor and none in opposition.
Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to the CPC recommendation? Any speakers in favor? We have a speaker coming forward. We have 4 speakers coming forward.
Good afternoon, Suzanne Kedron, 2323 Ross Avenue. What you have before you is a request to have this property pulled out of PD 85 and into MU2 zoning. PD 85 is very interesting. It is, quote unquote, a mixed-use PD, but it has very distinct areas. It has multifamily in one area, office in one area, retail and commercial in another. By rezoning this to MU2, should it be approved, would allow us to do a true mixed-use vertical project, and we're really excited about that. We have worked diligently with the stakeholders in the area, as you will see. Our notification map, it was attached to what I just handed out to you. We have most of the major property owners in support. We've also worked very closely with the PID, and we have a memorandum of understanding with them. Also in your packet, I've included a couple of other letters of support. Soon you will hear from Anson Riley. He is the developer of the project, and Anson and his family have spent over 5 years compiling the property, and now they're looking forward to master planning it for the future. With that, we hope you support the project, and we're here to answer any questions you might have. Thank you.
Next speaker in favor.
Good afternoon. My name is Ted Pallet. I live at 3200 Beverly Drive, 75205. I run a company called the Palace Companies that offices in Vickery Midtown, very near the property. I'm involved with the Vickery Midtown Public Investment District, which has a little bit of governance in the area and works with the city and other nonprofits as such to make the community nicer. Personally, as a company, I am the largest landlord in Vickery Midtown. I have approximately 1,475 non-subsidized, affordable workforce housing. So I must be the most revered and loved person here in the room today. I hear a lot about the affordable housing. I hear a lot about workforce housing. I'm about 12 to 15% of the marketplace, and we have roughly 2,000 vacant affordable housing units today in Vickery Midtown. So we invite everyone to bring their people that need affordable housing to Vickery Midtown. Today we're reviewing the overall, you know, MU2 zoning case for Pineland and Greenville. The neighborhood supports it. The Vickery Meadow Improvement District supports it. I, as one of the largest landlords around there, support it. And I think it's going to be very beneficial to our neighborhood for several reasons. One is that we combat a lot of crime in our neighborhood, and this particular location has been vacant for a very long time. And when certain other areas of the town had, let's say, drug dealers participating out of the retail space, those buildings were torn down. Some of them moved to this building, and now that building has been torn down. And we think that the corner itself is wonderful. It's accommodative to the MU2 because the adjacent properties to it are also MU2. In our neighborhood, you know, adding nicer new developments diversifies the housing stock in a better way. The preponderance of it is affordable housing, and we very much look forward and are excited about this development. I thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Next speaker in favor.
Hi, Anson Riley, 3133 Stanford Avenue, Dallas, Texas. Mr. Mayor, members of the council, thank you for hearing our case today. As you've heard, we've spent over 5 years putting together this property to have the opportunity to put in place a vibrant mixed-use development in the heart of the hospital district, at the north end of Vickery Meadow, or Vickery Midtown, and it's been a long process, and we've been good stewards of the property along the way, and I think we've contributed to the community along the way. As Ms. Kedron outlined, and as you've heard from Mr. Palais as well, we received overwhelming support. We haven't had any opposition to our case throughout the whole process. We've gone through the process in the way that our council members requested over the last 18 months, and I want to thank you for urging us to work with certain groups in the neighborhood as well to do that. And we've corresponded extensively and have the support from all the stakeholders. We've received full support from staff regarding their recommendation for MU2 for this site. We've received a unanimous vote for the city from the City Plan Commission. It was requested we work with the Vickery Midtown Improvement District, and basically received a letter of support from them, worked with them, and came to an agreement with them, an memorandum of understanding that dealt with some of the items that they were interested in. The site is surrounded on three sides by Texas Health Presbyterian, their campus. Texas Health's the largest employer in the neighborhood. They have over 3,000 employees in the neighborhood. They have over 150,000 patient encounters each year. And they have supported our project as well. In addition to Mr. Palais, we've received support from Mr. Ken Wright, whose family owns Half Price Books. Half Price Books is located in the neighborhood. He was here with us today, had an emergency, and had to leave. But that business is a national business, 120 stores around the country, and it's located in the neighborhood. We also received support, which a letter is in your package, from the Shops at Park Lane, which is the largest taxpayer in our neighborhood and in the PID that's there. So all of these stakeholders, as well as others that are not named, support MU2 zoning on this site due to the benefits that it affords the neighborhood. It allows more flexibility for us, more creativity, and the incentives that will be beneficial to us to put a full mixed-use development on the ground. It gives the power to do more of what you want us to do in a proper mixed-use development and bring these uses together for a vibrant mixed-use community. Everyone's excited about this, the prospect of this northern edge of Vickery Midtown evolving into a vibrant new development, and we ask that you please support our application on the basis of Planning Commission's recommendation and staff's recommendation. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Next speaker in favor? There are no further speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Gates.
Thank you, Mayor. I move to approve the zoning change as recommended by the City Plan Commission.
Second. Councilmember Gates.
Thank you. I do think you all were handed out a packet. The developer has kind of shared with you the related details related to this project. It has been a vacant area for a while. We had previous development was, I think there was a fire at the property, and the owners were, we were in litigation with them over it until we could finally get that property removed. And we also had other criminal activity and some zoning, some code issues. And it's now been vacant for a while. So I do think this is going to bring an added vibrant mixed-use development to the area. I had worked with the developers. I preferred to do some deed restrictions, but there's parcels of this property that they are leasing, and those leases are already in effect, which made it challenging. So then we moved to, and you have a copy of this, the MOU with the PID. There are certain uses that we wanted to make sure would not be active on the property, and as well as I was concerned about the sidewalks, the streetscape, trail connections, and an existing creek that goes through the property that it was addressed. I'm also, some of this property does include current units, and I think in the long-term planning, I think they're estimating that the units will remain. They've put money in those recently. They are affordable housing currently. Those units will probably, I don't want to speak for the developer, but what's the minimum, 4 years?
Probably around that time.
About, 4 to 6 years is what they said, that they will stay in use. And I was concerned about tenant relocation, so they have agreed at my request in this MOU to help with allocating up to $500 dwelling unit to a tenant for moving related expenses, as well as helping the tenants with relocation, like with a public school liaison and helping the children that are involved enrolled in the school district there. They're also, the caveat to this is this document is an MOU with the PID. So that's so important that the PID was here today. They are the ones that will be able to keep the developer honest and earnest related to the MOU. But it does address some of the concerns. We want to make sure this is a mixed use. And with the allowance of the staff recommendation is strong, with an MU2 because it allows the flexibility. It has the mixed income zoning incentives. So if they take advantage of the affordable, we'll have some affordable return back into the area. But also, it's highly residential. We don't have a lot of retail or office in the heart of the Vickery neighborhood. And this will, help contribute to the amenities that will help improve the neighborhood, and it's a good complementary use to the hospital. So for all those reasons, and going through CPC and with the unanimous support, I am supporting this project and ask for your support as well. And if you have any questions, please feel free to ask.
Councilmember Atkins.
Thank you, Jennifer. Great job done. Neva, will you come forward, please? And I believe that this is kind of like an old PD, and then we look at zoning. Chad West, Councilman West, Chairman West, you probably know because you're on CPC. This is what, a PD 85, and that's probably go back with 1960 something, 1970. So the PD is an old PD, and I think that Jennifer, for looking at it and changing to the MU2, that you have some bonus for the affordable units, stuff like that. This is something we need to look at throughout the whole city of Dallas because we got a whole lot of PDs, the bad zoning. in part of the city that I was at, we just don't know. And I wish you can come back to the city and just do a whole map on the entire city that I was at. Here's some PDs, here's some zones, really outdated. We need to update it. But Jennifer, you did a well job. Thank you very much for changing that. Thank you very much.
Mayor Pro Tem McGue.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just want to also thank my colleague, Ms. Gates, for bringing me into some of the discussions on this and your work on here. This is a very important project. It's a huge, important area for our city as it's kind of a gateway into my district. It connects so closely with Vickery Meadow and the hospital district, and so it's something that has a lot of eyes on it, and so I appreciate the level of work and attention that Ms. Gates put into this, and would just ask to continue to involve even further up in another PID as we go up outside of that public improvement district, just as we continue to look at this project. It looks good. I'd love to be able to see into the future a little bit more, but we're certainly looking forward to getting this area that has had many problems for a while moving in the right direction. So appreciate your work on this. Thank you, Ms. Gates.
Councilmember Kleinman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and I will be supporting Ms. Gates on this project, but I really do consider this another opportunity to try to grab some affordability. We can't just have our affordable units be older, decaying units that are affordable, what I would call, some people call market rate affordable units, and other people call just crappy apartments. We have to, when we do these new developments and put new zoning in place, I think that's when we have the opportunity to request some affordability. I know in this case the applicant does not have a development plan, which is also a little bit concerning to me. And while we do have in the MU2 zoning the density bonuses, which I'm very, very hopeful that the developer will take advantage of, again, it's kind of like give me the zoning now and trust me, we'll put it in later. So, Council, I have instructed my CPC representative to really start drilling down on this affordability thing. We are just not going to get the housing in the city that we need if we don't really start taking a firm stand. Nevertheless, I mean, I'm very familiar with this property. It's, I mean, just very close to even where I live, and this is definitely an improvement over what it is. I am looking forward to the apartment section of this kind of in the back of the property actually being redeveloped. I think that is our real opportunity to grab some affordability. We're just not doing it at this point. Thank you.
Councilmember Gates.
Thank you. I would just add we hear you, and I'm going to encourage the developer to make sure that they look at all options. It's important in this neighborhood. It's a stabilization area that we continue to revitalize it with in protecting the residents that are there. And so some affordable, I hear the PID talking about we want mixed income, and I think, this is going to offer some of that, but we don't want, just complete displacement, and we have to be cognizant of that and to do your best. And when it does get redeveloped, make sure that we take care of the residents that are there, and when it does, look at all the options and the mixed income bonuses that are part of this zoning. As well as, I'd like to add that, I mean, you do have an experienced track record in Dallas and not far from there. You own some property, so I know it's in your best interest that the area is developed in a thoughtful manner and taking into consideration all the amenities of that property as well as the residents. And so we're asking for your trust, we're trusting you, and because you've been a good steward in Dallas and have a lot of experience. But we're going to watch it. We're going to watch it closely to make sure that you follow through and to my colleagues. So that's kind of on record, and look forward to working through you with this process. So thank you.
No further discussion. All those in favor say aye. Any opposed? Motion carries.
Item PH1, a public hearing to receive comments on the proposed City of Dallas FY 2019-20 Urban Land Bank Demonstration Program Plan, and upon the close of the public hearing, approval of the City of Dallas FY 2019-20 Urban Land Bank Demonstration Program Plan in accordance with Chapter 379C of the Texas Local Government Code. Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak on this item? No speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Do I have a motion?
Yes, motion to approve.
Any discussion?
No, it's just another win for affordable housing today. And I would encourage the city, you know, after hearing our last audit on all of our land that we have, 5,000 lots, push more and more lots into the land bank so we can get them out onto the open market.
All right. Any other? Oh, no. Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
Item PH2. The public hearing to receive comments on substantial amendment number 1 to the FY 2019-20 action plan for the City of Dallas Community Development Block Grant, CDBG, Business Revolving Loan Program to terminate the CDBG Revolving Loan Fund Program from the FY 2019-20 action plan, and at the close of the public hearing authorize 1. The final adoption of substantial amendment number 1 to the FY 2019-20 action plan for the CDBG Business Revolving Loan Program to establish appropriations in the Revolving Loan Fund Phase-Out Fund in an estimated amount of $2,971,174. 3. The receipt of $2,243,549.30 in funds from People Fund and the deposit of an estimated $914,518.82 into the CDBG Program Income Fund, an estimated $473,955.57 into the Public-Private Partnership Fund, PPP, and $401,632.58 loan repayment from the Neighborhood Loan Program into the corresponding fund based on original source of funds to the eligible fund. 4. Transfer from the Revolving Loan Fund Phase-Out Fund an estimated $453,402.33 and any interest due to the HUD CDBG Program Income Fund to close the HUD CDBG RLF program. 5. The setup of a business loan receivable for an estimated principal amount of $624,692 of the outstanding loan portfolio from the People Fund, and 6. Amendments to the management contract with People Fund authorized by resolution number 18-1374 previously approved on September 26, 2018 and the Chapter 380 agreement with People Fund authorized by resolution 10-1238 previously approved on May 12, 2010 to allow People Fund to continue servicing the existing business revolving loan program and small business loan program portfolios on behalf of the city without originating any additional loans. Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak on this item? No speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Mendelson.
I'm going to move to approve.
Discussion?
Yes. Actually, is Mr. Mendoza available? Or Robin. So I just want to say thank you for pulling back in the loan servicing. And I was wondering if there's a commitment to keeping all loan servicing as different projects come as an outsourced item.
For small business lending, this is our only small business loan fund. And, yes, all of those loans will be serviced through People Fund through maturity. Which I believe the last date is listed for when the contract will end, yes.
Thank you.
All right. All those in favor say aye. Any opposed? This item is adopted.
This concludes your voting agenda. We'll move back to your open microphone speakers. You do have one remaining afternoon speaker, Sandra Crenshaw. While she comes forward, I'll recite the speaker guidelines. Speakers must observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any speaker making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the City Council, shall be removed from the room. Ms. Crenshaw, you will be given 3 minutes to speak. Please address your comments to Mayor Medrano only.
My name is Sandra Crenshaw, and boy, I really did like the NRA in Richmond when they stated that you, the government, does not run us. It's the very reason why this country was founded, to be able to criticize. And sometimes this city doesn't want us to criticize, but that helps keeps you grounded, kind of keeps you level-headed in terms of making the decision. When HB 240 was added, it also added that we should be able to criticize our council members. And when a government does us wrong, we don't have an appeal process. What we have to do is we have to go and hire a lawyer, more money, things that people that have less income don't have the ability to do. And so sometimes we have to do pro se, sometimes we protest, we file ethics groups, as I have done in the past, and then eventually get civil rights with the federal government. And all too saying that too many of us just give up. You know me, I filed ethics complaints and I was able to get relief from the federal government. We want to complain about the crime rate, but public corruption is a crime too. Last year, I brought to y'all's attention the fact that my house had been firebombed. And I mentioned that this city has the records. Today, I received a letter saying that there are no records. I'm asking Mr. Broadnax and the council members to get someone from the fire department to explain why an arson doesn't have the statute of limitations, and I'd like to know why there are no longer records here. I'm also going to go to the U.S. Attorney's Office and file for a restitution complaint for former council member James Fantroy, the late James Fantroy, who stole $150,000 from a neighborhood association that I founded around Paul Quinn College. And we're going to ask that he pay that money back, the restitution that he had there, because he gave $400,000 to his cousin. And we're going to ask that they give that money back to my neighborhood association. I'm also asking Carol Arnold once again to give back the money that she kept from the $12,000 that she got from Will Hamilton. I'm also asking for her to do that as well. So thank you very much, and if you can please get someone from the fire department to explain to me why there are no records, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. The following individuals have canceled. Open microphone speakers have canceled. Sonia Blue, Tia X Apollos, Cora Kennedy, and Galen Harrison. Mr. Mayor, this concludes your agenda.
All right. Thank you. It is 3:01, and we are adjourned.